Hey everyone, as you know, I've devoted myself to completely obliterating the revolting pseudo-archaeology cult. With the most obvious targets out of the way, it's time to move on to some of the newer rising stars. And today we will focus on a guy named Michael Button. What kind of bullshit does this guy spew? Let's find out. In case you're new to my content debunking pseudo-archaeology, this is a ridiculous pseudoscientific fad where a collection of blatant grifters spew endless horseshit on YouTube and podcasts about how archaeologists are all so super dumb and wrong and closed-minded, and there were all these super awesome technologically advanced ancient civilizations, and the pyramids were laser beam factories, and maybe aliens were involved, and there's literally zero evidence for any of this, but it's totally true because trust me, bro. Naturally, I've been running through the roster of this cult one fraud at a time, much to their chagrin. The godfather of modern pseudo-archaeology is Graham Hancock, and we debunked his face off in this video, as well as two of his pointless henchmen, Dan Richards and Jimmy Corsetti, who each got one or more follow-up videos. Then came Ben Van Kirkwick and his grift regarding super-advanced ancient vases, a claim which was debunked by his own research team. There's more to discuss here, including a scam regarding Ben's colleague Adam Young and his Artifact Foundation, where pseudo-archaeological claims are used to artificially inflate the value of artifacts so that rich people can buy and then donate them at huge discrepancies for obscene tax write-offs, but that will have to wait for another day. Today we are going to expose a more recent rising figure in this cult, and that's Button. Mikey is an interesting character, as he is not so outwardly toxic like most of the rest of the cult leaders. He exudes a calm, friendly demeanor that suits his grift quite well. What this means is that we won't have to waste much time on despicable tweets or things of that nature. We can focus strictly on the lies he tells about archaeology and debunk them thoroughly using factual information. So this will be a much more educational experience than other recent content on these frauds. But don't forget, it's true that the toxicity of this cult is blatantly obvious when people like Dan or Jimmy do things like accusing Lee Clare of stealing artifacts, or encouraging followers to actively try and get Lee or Flint Dibble fired from their jobs, beyond the constant trolling on social media. But even when members of this cult present themselves in a cordial and agreeable manner, like Michael or Graham, the rhetoric they push still poisons society with the anti-science narrative that all the archaeologists in the world are either incompetent or lying, which the suggestible viewer inevitably extends towards other areas of science, especially medicine, which exacerbates vaccine hesitancy and other forms of science denial that kill people. So this is not just fun, harmless fantasies, not by a long shot. Mikey has seen his popularity skyrocket recently thanks to being platformed by, who the hell else, Joe Rogan. He appeared on Joe's show in August of last year, which single-handedly inflated his media presence by at least an order of magnitude. Part of this has to do with the fact that unlike the rest of this cult, Button is mildly credentialed. He has a bachelor's degree in ancient history from the University of Birmingham. This doesn't make him anything remotely resembling an expert on anything, especially not in the adjacent but separate field of archaeology, but it does put him above most of the bottom feeders that inhabit this space. He knows that he can access the slightest veneer of credibility by referencing his degree, and he brings it up constantly. But to be clear, he is precisely the same as the other grifters in this space. He uses the same talking points, the same rhetorical techniques, the same framing of archaeologists as a closed-minded establishment suppressing inconvenient truths, the whole kit and caboodle. He just does it with a British accent while hiding behind a BA. The University of Birmingham website describes the ancient history BA thusly: explore the diverse histories of classical Greece, Republican and Imperial Rome, ancient Egypt, late antiquity, and the Byzantine Empire. So this is a degree in recorded human history. It does not cover prehistoric archaeology, it does not cover paleoanthropology, and it does not cover pre-agricultural societies or the deep human past. It has nothing to do with the topics Button makes videos about, which are almost exclusively centered on prehistory, allegedly lost civilizations, and the origins of complex society before the written record. Therefore, his degree does not qualify him to speak with authority on any of those things. He is nothing more than a layperson arrogantly flexing objective falsehoods which contradict well-substantiated knowledge in multiple fields that has been gathered over several centuries by thousands of career scientists. So why didn't Mikey keep going after his bachelor's? He has claimed in multiple interviews that he didn't continue in academia because he didn't trust what he was being taught by the ivory tower elites. He didn't like how he was emphatically told that we know all of our history and prehistory, that it's set in stone and nobody should ask questions about it ever. Mikey rejected this academic arrogance and decided to pursue the truth independently, like the rogue, trailblazing, truth-seeking, truthy McTrutherton that he is.
I felt myself growing a little bit tired of the fact that we were taught that we knew everything about our ancient past and our prehistoric past, when I think that is not the case. I think there's such a chasm, such a kind of shadow, such a murky cloud of unknown when it comes to these topics that I didn't agree with the way that it has been presented by mainstream academia.
Stupid mainstream academia, a term that is literally meaningless, always pretending to know absolutely everything about everything. Of course, in reality, this is the precise opposite of how academic disciplines work, especially a field like archaeology, and he definitely was not taught that. Nobody is. He's lying. This is just a pathetic story to rile up gullible people who are hostile towards academia and legitimate expertise. Archaeology is explicitly built around the acknowledgement of what we don't yet know. Archaeologists openly discuss the limits of current evidence, participate in ongoing debates, submit revised interpretations, and uncover new discoveries that change our current understanding, since they are the ones who actually go on excavations to find new sites and recover ancient artifacts. Anyone who knows literally anything about archaeology knows this. Button knows it too. So does Graham, who seems to fancy Button as his protege, since he comes off as more likable and credible than the other transparent wastes of human life in this cult. And he sports the same accent. Mikey knows this, and he leans into it hard. So like a Robert Malone or a Pierre Corey or so many other frauds that Joe Rogan has brought to prominence, Button presents himself as the credentialed insider who saw through the establishment from within and is using his know-how to blow the whistle on those closed-minded establishment shills. Of course, far from pushing back against academics, he is just misrepresenting them, as everyone in this cult consistently does. The manufactured skepticism he espouses as his own independent conclusion, the idea that the consensus on human prehistory is uncertain and there is far more to discover, is not a brave, heterodox opinion. It is itself the scientific consensus. It is a built-in feature of these fields. Every working archaeologist and paleoanthropologist on the planet agrees that their field is nowhere near complete and would gladly tell you that themselves. But far from simply pointing at this misleading rhetoric, we need to rigorously debunk Button's specific claims and concretely demonstrate what a worthless grifting fraud he is. And that will involve going through several of the videos on his own channel, as well as his Rogan appearance. So let's dig into this grifter's catalog. 3 years after graduating with his history BA, Michael started his eponymous YouTube channel, posting his first video on September 20th, 2024. He made videos about books, general history, the world wars, and found that he wasn't getting many views. Then on January 16th, 2025, he posted a video titled, "Why Did Civilization Collapse 3,000 Years Ago?" and it performed substantially better than what he had made until that point. Proving himself to be a quick learner, every video he posted after that was some bullshit about fabricated mysteries, fictional lost civilizations, all the same crap that has built an audience for the other grifters we've debunked from this space, including clickbait thumbnails with the pointing and the arrows and the "holy smokes, nobody can explain this" type of crap. This is not a coincidence, of course. Mikey understood very well that this type of content generates views, since it had already done so for others, making it a proven formula, and he committed to it with the entirety of his being. Rogan noticed Button's content and gave him a shout-out on April 5th of that year, which pushed him past 10,000 subscribers. Then, as we said, he went on Joe's show that August, and then in October he sat down with Graham Cock himself, who personally inducted him into the cult. Nobody will be surprised that this interview was just a coordinated smear campaign against working archaeologists, with a particular focus on Flint Dibble, of course, the Harry Potter to Graham's Voldemort. Graham will spend the rest of his life crying about Flint because of the fateful events in Joe's studio in 2024. Then in December of last year, Button was part of an Atlantis panel at the Quest for Ancient Civilizations conference in Scottsdale, Arizona. As you can see, he was in good company alongside Jimmy, Dan, and a bunch of other grifters. And yet, Button has been careful to present himself as someone who doesn't take sides. He's evidence-based, you see. He follows the evidence wherever it leads. This is another common lie which he exploits for plausible deniability. When challenged, he can point to that framing and say he never claimed anything definitive. Just like Graham, but anyone actually watching his content closely can see exactly what he is doing. He uses real research and cites legitimate papers, which makes his audience believe that his conclusions are grounded in that research, but he's just sneaking in claims that the research he's citing does not actually support. He used to push this both sides rhetoric a lot. He used to say things on social media like, "I have enormous respect for archaeologists and archaeology." Don't look for this tweet now, he deleted it. It seems that the respect was just performative, and he dropped it once he realized that it wasn't what his target audience wanted to hear. Archaeologists are all lying frauds, remember? Here are some more of his deleted tweets. Here's one where he pretends that each generation of archaeologists believed they were close to the full picture, whatever that means, framing the entire discipline as perpetually overconfident and therefore inherently untrustworthy. Predictably, that tweet was met with a response from many archaeologists who swiftly put him in his place. Peter Brand called him out for being a clueless idiot demeaning the entire field with a tired old script used by many pseudoscience peddlers before him. Justine Warren said, "Then how the fuck does the field evolve, so are you lying or stupid?" Joseph Wilson said, "Why the shit do you keep telling this dumb lie no matter how many times you're corrected?" A few more as well, pointing out that if he had the courage to actually talk to any of them, they would have corrected him long ago. Almost every single reply pushed back on him, making him look like a complete idiot. And of course, here he is joining his hero Graham's targeted attack on Flint, while also claiming that Flint's prominence derives entirely from attacking Graham. Flint reminded Mikey that he's only known for lying about science. Once again, every single one of these tweets has been deleted. Button is exactly the same as the rest of these grifting scumbags. The only meaningful differences are that he has a bachelor's degree in a semi-related field, he's newer to the grift, and he's even more of a coward, typically completely ignoring the people who push back on his lies, or deleting entire threads when the heat gets too strong. Alright, so let's get down to brass tacks. First, let's take a look at this video from April of last year called "I Visited Malta's Ruins and They Might Rewrite History." Wow, he went to a place. Being a clueless tourist pretending to know about archaeology is good enough for Graham, so it's good enough for Mikey too. This video is the total Button package. Manufactured mystery, biased framing, arguments from incredulity all day, and the perpetual suggestion that actual archaeologists just don't want you asking questions. So let's see how these Maltese temples change everything, yeah?
I've just come back from Malta, where I spent a week visiting the island's mysterious megalithic ruins. And by the end of this video, you'll realize that the accepted timeline of Malta's ancient history simply doesn't make sense. And I'll share a new update that suggests Malta's story is far older and more mysterious than we could have ever imagined.
Holy shit, secret knowledge! He walked around and looked at stuff, and now he knows more than archaeologists who excavate and study these sites for a living. Real knowledge is stupid. Super cool mysteries I made up are way more better.
We need to start with the mainstream view of Malta's history. The orthodox timeline says that the first humans arrived on the islands during the Neolithic, around 5900 BC. These people were early farmers who mostly lived in caves. However, this period of habitation didn't last, and factors such as climate change led to the islands becoming too dry to sustain agriculture, and thus the Maltese archipelago once again became uninhabited for another 1000 years. But then, a second wave of colonization arrived around 3850 BC. It is this culture to which mainstream archaeology attributes all the magnificent temple building we see today.
However, this is where things stop making sense. Somehow, this group of people, supposedly a tiny island population of early farmers, with no wheel, no metal tools, and no writing, suddenly, practically overnight, developed incredible skills in megalithic construction.
No, Malta was not a tiny island population. During the temple period of 3800 to 2400 BCE, Malta is estimated to have supported a population of 5 to 10,000 people. With a total land area of 316 square kilometers, that yields a population density of around 16 to 32 people per square kilometer. Mainland Europe at the same time was estimated to be around 1 to 2 people per square kilometer as the standard baseline density. So Malta at 16 to 32 people per square kilometer was 6 to 32 times the European Neolithic average. This is not a tiny population. It is an exceptionally dense one by the standards of the time. Next up, he explains in a perplexed manner that they had no wheel, no metal tools, and no writing. Well, this is not specific to the Maltese temples. He is describing the universal baseline conditions of the entire European Neolithic. Stonehenge, Karnak in Brittany, the Cairn of Barnenez, which predates Gigantea in Malta by centuries, all of these were built without wheels, metal tools, or writing. Every major Neolithic megalithic site across Europe and the British Isles was built without them. He's trying to manufacture a sense of impossibility where none exists.
Let's take the largest megalithic site, Gigantea, as an example. Gigantea was apparently constructed only 200 years after humans first repopulated the islands, but it's an astounding stunningly impressive project. Some of the stones weigh over 50 tons, yet these massive megaliths were quarried, precisely cut, transported, and perfectly aligned without metal tools, without even draft animals to pull the stones.
Without draft animals to pull the stones? Are you sure about that, champ? Based on what, your butthole? I ask because the Phragsis project was a major multi-year, multi-establishment excavation program that produced the most comprehensive zoarchaeological data set we have of the Maltese temple period. And that team found cattle bones at every single temple site they excavated. Cattle are draft animals, aren't they? That means livestock that are trained to pull shit. Yes, they are among the most widely and continuously used draft animals in human history, and they are still used as draft animals today. Do you think they could have used those? Also, every time, without fail, and no matter what site they're talking about, these douchebags always rave about the incredible precision of the cutting and the immaculate perfection of the alignment, while showing you footage of stones with no such otherworldly precision or perfection. Mikey just asserts it, and gullible people nod their heads. They were ancient people who did their best, nothing more.
I mean, look at the size of some of these blocks. It's estimated the temple was over 25 feet tall, but how did they lift these stones so high? The complex is also astronomically aligned with the winter solstice, implying the builders had an observational understanding of solar cycles, which is incredible, considering the sheer infancy of their civilization and the lack of written language for architectural design. The temple also suggests centralized planning, organized labor, and motivations powerful enough to mobilize an entire society, yet all of this was supposedly achieved in just 200 years? It makes zero sense to me.
Astronomical alignment is the result of watching the night sky for a long time and recording the positions of things. Should we be impressed by their patient and thorough observations over many years? Sure, I guess, but it's not a mystery. Same with the rest. Planning, labor, motivation. Oh my goodness, how did they plan things and then work to achieve them? It's not like they were talking to each other or anything. Does this moron think that no written language means no spoken language either? Working also was not a new concept. That's sort of what every human did until the 20th century. 200 years is plenty of time to build some shit. All we're left with is how they move big rock, which is really all these assholes ever have in the first place.
There's a population could develop this level of sophistication in such a tiny time frame. I mean, where are the precursors? Where is the slow build-up of technology and ideas, the trial and error? You'd expect to see cruder efforts, the development of skills, not immediately jumping to such impressive construction at the very beginning of their civilization.
To put it simply, if the mainstream view is to be believed, then this leap represents the fastest development of construction technology and societal organization ever seen in human history. And it simply doesn't make sense.
And it's not like they could have brought these ideas with them. Even with its accepted date, Gigantea is by far the oldest megalithic site in the Mediterranean, and was the oldest on Earth until the discovery of the even more mysterious Göbekli Tepe in Turkey.
So how did this culture go from zero to master engineers, builders, and astronomers in only 200 years? In my opinion, that just doesn't make sense.
Ah yes, a transparent name drop of a site as potential viewers have heard of, just in case they were falling asleep. Anyway, the precursors he's whining about are indeed there, he just doesn't read his own sources. David Trump's 1981 study, Megalithic Architecture in Malta, presents a complete typological sequence of structural development across the temple period. You can see the clear progression from earlier simpler structures to the later more complex and monumental ones. Trump states explicitly that the description of this sequence may seem a little labored, but it illustrates the progressive advances made by the designers of these buildings. Again, that study was published 44 years ago, not exactly hot off the presses. More modern work by Whittle, Malone, et al. In 2019 also contradicts Button's baseless characterization of sudden inexplicable construction. At Shara, the town where Gigantea is located, they describe a more extended, steady, and slowly changing cultural sequence where one phase slides into the next. Their model shows that the site was being used over a very long time span with abundant Zebug period material, indicating activity there well before the later monumental phases. In other words, the sequence at Shara is not one of abrupt appearance, but of long-term continuity and gradual change. Mikey even tells his audience that Gigantea was the oldest megalithic site in the world until Göbekli Tepe, while highlighting text that says something completely different. It says that Gigantea was the world's second oldest man-made religious structure after Göbekli Tepe, not the oldest megalithic site. He either can't read what he's highlighting, or he is deliberately misquoting it, knowing that his viewers won't catch the lie. Here's a wiki entry of the oldest sites. There are two older than Göbekli Tepe, and 19 in between that and Gigantea. Whoops.
But it doesn't stop there.
The orthodox view claims that over the next 1,000 years in total, this culture were absolutely prolific in their temple building, somehow building at least 30 megalithic temple sites all across the tiny Maltese islands. This is an entirely new site roughly every 33 years, and that's only the ones we've discovered. There could be more.
Not every temple was the size of Gigantea, Chief. The smallest known temple site is just 6.5 meters long. One small to medium-sized temple made from locally and abundantly available soft, workable limestone every 30 years from a population 10 times denser than the European Neolithic average is not a mystery. So if it doesn't make sense to you, Mike, you might just be stupid or grifting. Yeah, the second one.
So why did this culture appear? Immediately begin constructing astoundingly impressive megalithic temples, consistently pumping one out every few decades, and then suddenly disappear with no sign of conquest or war.
Conquest and war are not the only reasons for civilizational collapse, and the end of the temple period is thoroughly recorded. The collapse is documented in the skeletal record, the paleobotanical record, soil micromorphological record, and chronological modeling, different areas that all independently point to the same conclusion. The skeletal remains show a society that had been deteriorating for a long time. In the final centuries of the temple period, between 2600 and 2400 BCE, half of the people dying were children, and the adult bones showed sustained malnutrition. These are direct physical measurements from human remains, which show a population that had been experiencing generational nutritional stress for generations before the disappearance. The population was in the advanced stages of a slow, prolonged demographic collapse that was suffering for a long time, and was thus forced to leave the island. All of this is common knowledge among scholars who research this area.
Why did they need to build so many temples so soon after one another? And how did a tiny island population have the resources and the ability to achieve this? You'd think Malta was simply too small to sustain the necessary civilization that could develop the enormously sophisticated construction techniques found in the temples. And we see no evidence for the large-scale domestic agriculture that surely would have been needed to support the people who achieved this. So how does any of this make sense?
Make it make sense, you guys! Okay, sure. You're just lying about there having been no agriculture. Pollen cores taken from Maltese sediment show rapid deforestation beginning in the early Neolithic, which was followed by centuries of intensive agriculture dominating the landscape. The pollen record shows the shift from mixed farming to heavy arable agriculture happening around 5,800 years ago and persisting. Soil micromorphology at Shara confirms that because of agriculture, the woodland was stripped and the organic matter was lost, while the soil thinned, reddened, and calcified over centuries of intensive use. As the centuries passed, the soil erosion and climate conditions worsened, which is evidenced by the changing pollen record and the diminishing tree remains. The land and the people were failing together across centuries long before the end. Graucut et al. State that the chronological modeling indicates the decline of temple period society over several centuries before the so-called 4.2 Ka event. The population was already in advanced decline from internal environmental collapse before that external pressure arrived. The collapse did not happen in the blink of an eye, and it was not mysterious. It was the predictable outcome of a dense population that had been over-farming a small island with finite soil resources for generations. So as you can see, the pollen record, the soil micromorphology, and the geoarchaeological survey across multiple Maltese sites all document intensive, sustained farming that degraded the island's soil from the early 4th millennium BCE onward. Large-scale domestic agriculture existed to such an extreme extent that it was one of the key factors in this civilization's collapse. So, Mikey, when you say, no evidence of large-scale agriculture, what you're telling everyone is that you're either a fucking idiot who has never spent even 10 seconds looking into this topic, or you're a worthless fraud lying through your teeth.
Then there's arguably the most impressive construction on the islands, the mysterious Hypogeum.
The Hypogeum is a multi-level subterranean structure carved directly into solid limestone. It has three levels, and the deepest reaches about 12 meters underground. This is deeper than most modern subway systems. This architecture has no known precedent, and is dated to the very beginning of this culture's arrival on Malta. So how did they immediately have the skill to build such a project? And is this really possible with stone chisels?
The Hypogeum was not dated to the very beginning of anything. He is once again misquoting his source. He is highlighting the date when the earliest remains were found at the site. That is not the date of construction. It is the date of the earliest biological material deposited at the site. It says it right there. Earliest remains, or when people were first there. The Hypogeum, like many Neolithic monuments in Malta and elsewhere, almost certainly began as a natural cave or simple rock-cut cavity used for the dead, a practice documented extensively in the Zebug phase, which predates the temple period entirely. The Wikipedia page he's showing explicitly states that the Hypogeum dates to the Siflini phase, listed here as 3300 to 3000 BCE, which already contradicts what he said, but again, gets even worse for him since this range is outdated. Newer statistical modeling and radiocarbon dating done by Malone et al. In 2020 places this phase at 3080 to 2760 BCE. Therefore, the Hypogeum dates to the middle of the temple period, after centuries of above-ground temple construction was already underway. In this instance, I think Mike is both totally clueless about this research and also deliberately lying by highlighting this earliest remains date, when at the top of that same page, it offers a totally different time frame.
Even more mysteriously, some of the chambers are carved to create an acoustic resonance effect. A voice used at a frequency of 110 Hz resonates throughout the entire underground complex, creating a powerful, vibrating echo that can be felt as much as heard. This acoustic phenomenon is thought to have induced trance-like states or altered consciousness, but it again begs the question, how were they so sophisticated as to achieve this right at the beginning of their civilization? To add to the mystery, some human remains found here were skulls with unusual elongation and cranial features. Don't panic, I'm not going to claim they're aliens, but it adds to the mystery all the same.
Holy shit, super cool frequency stuff and aliens maybe. This keeps getting crazier and crazier, except not at all. This 110 Hz figure comes from Cook et al. In 2008, a study that measured the acoustic properties of Neolithic chambers in Britain, not Malta. The paper he shows on screen is Debertolis et al. From 2015, which actually measured the resonant frequency of the oracle room in the Hypogeum using controlled acoustic testing. They measured the resonant frequency at 114 Hz and a lower mode of 68 to 70 Hz. They noted in their paper that this was a bit different from the 110 to 111 Hz that was initially expected based on previous research in other Neolithic chambers. The paper he is showing on screen documents, in its own text, that 110 Hz does not apply to the Hypogeum. He is constantly contradicting what he shows with what he says, and it doesn't resonate throughout the entire underground complex. The resonance effect is localized to the middle level of the complex. No research conducted on the Hypogeum ever recorded or experimented with trance-like states. This is again from Cook, where they found measurable changes in electroencephalographic activity in language processing brain regions when subjects were exposed to frequencies around 110 Hz in British Neolithic chambers, not the Hypogeum. This graph that he shows, figure 5 from Debertolis, is the acoustic baseline taken before acoustic testing began. The caption for this figure specifically states that it is nothing to remark, just a little noise from the neighborhood. This dumbass is showing the control instead of actual data. The paper contains multiple test results from controlled experiments using male and female voices both singing and shouting, Irish frame drums, a bullhorn, and a conch shell. But he chose to show the baseline graph because he didn't read the paper. He didn't even read the caption of that figure. He just thought, hey, cool looking graph, make me look smart. And finally, those skulls were classified as being long-headed type, a standard 20th century craniological classification for dolichocephaly. Skulls classified as dolichocephalic fall within normal human variation and are found in living humans today. And then he says he's not going to claim they are aliens, even though he just implied it. Classical plausible deniability implies it, promptly disavows it to seem more credible, and the association is already made for the gullible viewer.
So how do we account account for the presence of these astounding megalithic constructions. With no architectural antecedents, no civilizational buildup, and no evidence of large-scale agriculture.
As we've discussed, false, false, false. Nothing but lies from Mikey.
Is archaeology sure about these dates? Well, let's now take a look at the science used to date the temples.
The primary method used to date the megalithic temples of Malta is radiocarbon dating. Archaeologists date organic material like charcoal, bone, or plant remains found in or near the temple layers. The amount of carbon-14 left in the material tells scientists how long it's been since the organism died. At Malta's temples, however, only a few radiocarbon samples have been taken, and crucially, only from on top of or around the megaliths, not beneath.
This is a key distinction. If these samples were taken from beneath the stones, it would prove that the stones were placed on top of, and crucially after, the organic material was deposited. However, only having dates from on or around the megaliths doesn't really prove their age.
Textbook pseudo-archaeology bullshit. First, he's just flat out lying when he says we have no carbon-14 dates from under the temples, as we will prove in a moment. Graham Cock tells this lie and Button blindly repeats it, but the rest is more subtle. Take genuine uncertainty in any scientific dating program and reframe it as evidence that the entire chronological framework is unreliable. First, there are not only a few samples. He's lying. The Phragsis project alone generated over 500 new radiocarbon dates from Maltese temple sites. They then synthesized multiple independent radiocarbon dates from multiple sites into a Bayesian chronological model. Button has no fucking idea how this stuff works. The temples were not built on bare ground. They were built on rubble fill, prepared floors, and stratified interior deposits. Layers of material that accumulated during construction and use sealed beneath and between the stonework. Samples taken from within these sealed layers, such as animal bone, charcoal, and plant remains, date to the building's use and construction phases, not incidental material scattered nearby. This is basic stratigraphic archaeology. Simply put, sealed contexts give reliable dates because the material cannot have moved in from anywhere else. Whittle, Malone et al. In 2019 date the rock-cut tomb at Shara to 3640 to 3500 BCE. This is a tomb cut into the bedrock that predates the above-ground construction at the same site, so they are dating the precursor structures beneath the later building phases. Exactly what Button claims they don't do. Instead, he suggests that a prior population built around 30 to 33 megalithic structures and then disappeared without leaving any tools, human remains, pottery, charcoal, animal bone, construction debris, or any stratigraphic trace of any kind anywhere. Cool story, bro.
The temples could have already been there.
Archaeologists also analyze pottery styles, tools, and figurines. Much of the pottery found at these sites has been cross-dated with other Mediterranean sites at the accepted date. But again, just because pottery was found from this period doesn't prove that this was when the temples were constructed. It just proves that people lived here at this time. There's no reason to suggest the culture responsible for the pottery couldn't have found these sites already there, inherited them, and use them in their own society.
His own pottery argument dismantles his hypothesis. Pottery alone does not date construction, that's true, but he is dismissing one strand of a multi-strand framework in which radiocarbon dating, stratigraphy, ceramic typology, and architectural sequence analysis all converge on the same chronology independently. The ceramic sequence evolves alongside the temple sequence in the same stratigraphic layers at the same sites. When multiple independent threads of evidence all converge on the same conclusion, the conclusion is corroborated. That's how science works.
On top of this, some geologists have raised eyebrows at the extent of erosion on certain structures, especially temples like Menadra, Hajarkim, and Gigantea. Some megaliths show signs of deep weathering, including rounded edges, pitted surfaces, and extensive limestone flaking. Critics argue this level of erosion would typically take much, much longer than 6,000 years, especially considering Malta's relatively dry climate.
So once you realize that there are no radiocarbon dates from beneath the megaliths, and that the erosion points to these quarried stones being much older, the mainstream dating of these complexes starts to look less secure.
All of the Maltese megalithic structures are built from two types of limestone, Globigerina and Coralline. Globigerina limestone is soft, highly porous, and extremely vulnerable to salt crystallization weathering. Malta is a small island in the Mediterranean Sea, and salt-laden moisture continuously penetrates the pores of the stone, crystallizes as humidity fluctuates, and shatters it from the inside out. This produces the precise rounded edges, pitted surfaces, and surface flaking Mikey describes as suspicious. So no, it is not evidence of extraordinary age. No geologists have raised their eyebrows at it because they actually understand rocks. This is the expected behavior of this specific stone in this specific environment. Button went to Hal Tarshin, which is one of the many temples covered by a large protective shelter, to combat ongoing deterioration caused by Malta's climate, because they are primarily built out of Globigerina limestone. It says this at the sites. Malta receives regular winter rainfall, humidity averaging 76% annually, and constant salt-laden marine air from all directions. That marine exposure is exactly what drives salt crystallization weathering in Mediterranean limestone structures. It is not a dry climate in any meaningful geological sense. Again, nothing but dumb fuckery from Button here.
It seems to me that the only reason these temples are dated to this period is that they can't be dated any earlier without rewriting the established timeline of human civilization. But the evidence pointing to this date of construction is limited at best, and the developmental timeline is nonsensical.
So that raises the question, what if these temples, this megalithic culture, was older? Well, for this to be feasible, then there would need to be older human presence on the island. But is this even possible?
Well, it's not just possible, it's arguably been proved. In a groundbreaking new discovery announced last week, archaeologists discovered cooked fish and deer bones, along with other organic and human-made materials, indicating that humans inhabited Malta well before the arrival of the Neolithic farmers. Extensive testing confirmed that these remains are at least 8,500 years old, possibly 9,000, pushing back the timeline of human activity on the islands by a millennium. Not only does this rewrite Malta's prehistory, it also opens the door for human presence on the islands going back much further.
This is the big payoff these frauds aim for in every video. Shit is so much older than we thought, so archaeologists are dumb and wrong, and I'm way smarter than them for figuring this out. Well, it's all bullshit. Button claims the only reason these temples are dated to this period is that archaeology can't revise the timeline without rewriting established history, and then he immediately cites a Nature paper which did exactly that. Human presence in Malta approximately 8,500 years ago was confirmed, and the timeline changed. Scientists did science, which changed what we know about science. Unprecedented, I know. But more importantly, this paper has no bearing on the temple dates. The humans confirmed at Lotnia Cave were hunter-gatherers who predate the temples by 3,000 years. The temples themselves have their own independent, robust dating evidence that has nothing to do with when humans first arrived on the island. Humans being there does not equal temples are older than the data says because reasons. Pathetic.
But there's more.
A 1917 discovery of a human tooth in the Khar Dalam cave has sparked renewed interest after modern analysis suggested it may belong to a Neanderthal. Researchers from the Natural History Museum in London identified traits unique to Neanderthal teeth. If confirmed through DNA testing, this would push back human presence in Malta by around 30,000 years and suggest that Neanderthals once inhabited the island.
Now, obviously, these aren't Homo sapiens, but if Neanderthals could reach these islands, there's nothing to suggest Homo sapiens couldn't either. But how could these early humans have possibly got here?
Well, Malta wasn't always an island. During the last ice age, sea levels were over 100 meters lower than they are today, exposing vast stretches of land that are now submerged. Malta was connected to Sicily, making it accessible to migrating humans and animals. Then, as the last ice age ended and glaciers melted around 11,000 years ago, rising seas gradually cut Malta off, turning it into the isolated island we know today.
But if Neanderthals could have migrated across this land bridge, then why couldn't Homo sapiens?
If true, this would completely rewrite human history on Malta and would put the accepted dates of the megalithic construction into serious jeopardy. If humans were on the islands before the end of the last ice age, before the islands even became islands, it would change everything.
All bullshit. Two pteranodont molars were found at Khar Dalam Cave in 1917 and assessed as potentially Neanderthal on the basis of pteranodontism. In the early 20th century, pteranodontism was believed to be a characteristic exclusive to Neanderthals and an extinct archaic feature. This has since been disproven. It occurs in other archaic hominins and in modern Homo sapiens. Radiocarbon dating of the teeth by Sir Kenneth Oakley at the British Museum placed them within the Neolithic period, roughly 5,200 to 2,500 1500 BCE. But even if the teeth were Neanderthal, his conclusion still doesn't follow. Neanderthal presence on Malta would say nothing about when Homo sapiens arrived, and it would not tell you anything about when the temples were built.
I can't believe I got this far into the video without mentioning cart ruts, but let's get into this now.
One of Malta's most baffling mysteries is the network of ancient parallel lines etched into the island's limestone. There is no agreed explanation for them. They're clearly man-made, carved deep into the rock, sometimes up to almost a meter deep, and they crisscross the island in strange overlapping patterns. Were they used for transport? Possibly, but we have no idea what kind of vehicle or sledge could have created such consistent grooves, or why they run so deep. And remember, this civilization wasn't supposed to have the wheel. Some ruts even mysteriously run straight off cliffs and continue underwater, stretching for hundreds of meters beneath the sea.
The fact they head off under the ocean is especially baffling. Why would the ancient builders want to do this, and how? Well, perhaps they weren't underwater when they were carved. Perhaps they were carved much earlier when sea levels were lower.
This links to the mystery of the underwater temples, structures off the coast of Malta that some researchers believe may be ancient megalithic sites, now submerged. Divers have reported formations that resemble large stone blocks arranged in unnatural patterns, possibly foundations or walls. Mainstream archaeology disputes this, suggesting they might be natural, but others argue that the symmetry and alignment point to human construction. If they are man-made, and it's an if, it would mean temples or settlements were built before the end of the last ice age, when sea levels were far lower, placing their origin more than 10,000 years ago, long before Malta's known temple builders.
Holy shit, this is just like Graham Cox thing. Super old, super crazy, awesome civilizations. Mikey is crushing it Graham Cox style. Except not even a little bit, he's just lying, as always. The cart ruts do not extend under the sea for hundreds of meters. That's a lie. Then he refers to some researchers. Want to get a little more specific there, champ? There's only one structure, which is called Jebel Golbahar, and there is only one researcher who has identified it as an ancient megalithic site. That person is Hubert Zeidelmeyer, a retired German real estate investor and a follower of Zechariah Sitchin, the charlatan known for claiming that ancient Sumerian cuneiform texts contain accounts of aliens visiting Earth. Yes, the douchebag that Billy Carson rips off his grift from. Zeidelmeyer claims a professorship through an institution called the University of Quantum Dynamics, which is not a real thing. It's just a scam website that offers courses on Atlantis for 690 euros. But you can trust him, since he's a fourth level spirit in an avatar. I'm not sure how many levels there are, but I think that's pretty good. Zeidelmeyer announced the discovery of the Maltese underwater temple at a paleo-astronaut conference. When he was asked by attendees to explain how he discovered the site, he said that he had been guided there by his primeval ancestors, the god Patha Idana Asuara Tasida and the goddess Ashtar Tara, queen of Atlantis, who he met personally on Malta. Lucky guy, huh? This jerk and this jerk alone is who Button is referencing when he says some researchers. In reality, divers who have visited Jebel Golbahar reported that the visible formations are consistent with modern boulders that have been illegally dumped, something that is unfortunately common around Malta. Mystery solved.
Something else pointing to this earlier date is the alignment of the temples. The temples all across the Maltese islands are pointed in different, seemingly random directions. This is odd for religious sites, which typically align with consistent markers. However, researchers George Agius and Frank Ventura found that their axes are not random, but exactly correspond to the rising and setting points of the star Sirius, over thousands of years. Due to the precession of the equinoxes, a slow wobble of Earth's axis, Sirius's position on the horizon shifts over millennia. This suggests that the temples were constructed over a span of nearly 5,000 years, from around 9,150 BC to 4,250 BC, each aligned to Sirius's position at the time. Now, this could be a coincidence, but it would be a pretty remarkable one, considering it matches every single temple. We also know for a fact that the temple builders used astronomy in their construction. The problem is that this alignment puts the beginning of the temple phase at 11,000 years ago, way earlier than is accepted, and at the time the sea levels were lower.
Now, this date of 11,000 years ago is, I'm sure, very interesting to many of you, as it aligns perfectly with Göbekli Tepe, the younger Dryas, Plato's description of Atlantis, and many other aspects of the increasingly popular theory for a lost civilization of the Ice Age. Now, what I've said in this video is by no means proof of this, but I do think that the accepted timeline of Malta's ancient history doesn't make sense. But what do you think? Please let me know in the comments, and if you enjoyed this video, please consider giving it a like or subscribing to my channel. Peace.
Peace, bro. Ancient Ice Age super advanced civilization confirmed, bro. Mikey really saved the high octane bullshit for the very end, and this set of blatant lies offers the clearest evidence for both his intentions and where he gets his script from. Aegeus and Ventura published their archaeoastronomical analysis of the Maltese temples in 1980. Their finding was that the orientations of the Maltese temples are statistically non-random, meaning that the azimuthal directions in which the temples are aligned are not distributed uniformly or randomly, and therefore reflect intentional directional referencing of some kind. In identifying possible astronomical targets for the non-random orientations, they assessed multiple stellar and solar candidates and explicitly left the question of which specific targets were intended open for further research. They did not propose 9150 BCE or any date outside the established temple period. They worked entirely within the accepted archaeological chronology. So where is Button getting this shit from? The serious interpretation and the date range of 9150 to 4250 BCE come from a blog post on Graham Cox's website written by Lainey Radike. She has no qualifications in archaeology or astronomy, so certainly not archaeoastronomy, and she states outright that she set aside standard archaeological dating in order to develop the serious alignment theory. She also explicitly relies on the work of Luigi Maria Ugolini, a fascist regime operative who was sent to Malta by Mussolini to enforce Mediterraneanism, a racist pseudoscience invented to justify Italian colonial supremacy. Radike knowingly embraces this fascist fraud as the basis for rejecting standard archaeology. She took the statistical finding from Aegeus and Ventura that the orientations are non-random, discarded their multi-target analysis, rejected the established archaeological chronology of the temples, and replaced all of it with her own conclusion that the temples must align with the rising and setting of Sirius across a span extending back to 9150 BCE because she says so. Button takes Radike's words and puts them in Aegeus and Ventura's mouths, respected academic researchers at the University of Malta who did not reach this conclusion and whose published work is incompatible with it, because he's a fraud. And we know for a fact he's doing this because he uses many of her assets in his video. Well, that was a fucking train wreck, wasn't it? This was the perfect video for illustrating Button's grifter techniques, his extent of research, and how he is just another lying scumbag pushing fabricated mysteries for fame and cash. Here's another video from around the same time, which is about Gunung Padang. Here the mask is completely off, and he isn't hiding his intentions anymore. Archaeology is suppressing the truth. Archaeologists are scared of Graham Hancock. We should all work together. You all know the drill by now. Let's check it out.
If you haven't heard about Gunung Padang and the controversy surrounding it, then what you're about to hear will probably shock you. And by the end of this video, you'll see just how viciously tribal this debate has become. And I'll cover a huge update that's just been announced regarding this fascinating ancient mystery.
Gunung Padang is a megalithic site in Indonesia that has sparked intense debate over its origins and significance. Built atop an extinct volcano, it contains massive stone blocks and layered terraces, initially believed to date back around 2,500 years.
However, a new study using radiocarbon dating
suggests that buried layers beneath the surface could be as old as 24,000 years, built in a pyramid-like structure. Considering the conventional timeline puts the start of civilization at roughly 5,000 years ago, this completely upends mainstream archaeology's idea of the past.
Now, skeptics dismiss these claims, meaning the site has become something of a battleground between conventional science and alternative history.
Whoa, sick laser sounds, bro. Yeah, there's no battleground between conventional science and alternative history. There's scientists doing science, and then a bunch of idiot frauds spewing lies on the internet, hoping to fly under the radar for long enough to make some grifter cash. What Buttnut conveniently left out is that Nada Wijaya spent years before this paper was published, publicly committed to proving that Gunung Padang was a massive pyramid that was somehow linked to Atlantis, and he even wrote a book on it called Plato Never Lied. Atlantis is in Indonesia. Yeah, the conclusion was set 10 years before the so-called research was published. The paper was just his latest attempt to make the evidence fit the desired conclusion. Yet another crank.
Now, this wasn't just a random group of crazy nutters. It wasn't some weirdo like me going there and claiming it was some ancient pyramid.
No, this was a team of seasoned and well-credentialed geologists, geophysicists, and engineers. Dr. Hillman himself has 177 publications and over 9,000 citations. He's a senior geologist with an extensive background in tectonics and paleoseismology, exactly the fields of study most qualified to interpret this type of data. His team included experts in geophysical surveying and radiocarbon dating, and the paper is meticulously put together with lots of really interesting evidence. However, the controversy began when the journal Archaeological Prospection retracted the paper in early 2024, citing issues with its scientific rigor.
Now, this retraction fueled a heated debate between mainstream archaeologists, who saw it as a victory for academic integrity, and alternative history proponents who decried it as censorship and suppression. So what's going on here?
What's going on here is that sometimes credentialed scientists are also frauds. James Torr, Avi Loeb, they're fewer in number than the random crazy nutters, and it's refreshing to hear Mikey admit that he's in that camp, but scholars can also grift. His paper was retracted because it's dog shit. He and his team drilled a core about 40 feet into the ground, radiocarbon dated the soil they retrieved, got a date of around 25,000 years ago, and claimed that was when the structure was built. Radiocarbon dating tells you when organic material died. If you date loose soil, you are dating when plants decomposed, not when something was built above it. To date a construction event, you need organic material that was deposited as part of the construction itself, such as charcoal from fires, bone, or plant matter sealed within the structure. There was none, so the paper is shit. This is not just some kind of disagreement over interpretation. It's a shit paper that used shit methodology to support a predetermined baseless conclusion. The dated material was not linked to any human construction, so the conclusion does not follow, and the paper was therefore retracted, precisely as it should have been.
However, mainstream archaeologists argue that it's basically all natural, which it could be. This is an extinct volcano, after all, and lava tubes and weirdly shaped stones are certainly something we find in nature. But without excavation, no one can say for sure.
And strangely, despite the site's significance, a full-scale archaeological excavation has never been conducted.
Nope. Full-scale archaeological excavation has been conducted at Gunung Padang. Mikey is just flat-out lying again. Dr. Lutfi Yondri, an Indonesian archaeologist, excavated the site with trenches directly alongside the terrace and architecture, recovered pottery, groundstone, and charcoal from areas immediately adjacent to and under the walls, and published a book on his findings. That is the proper methodology that should have been utilized with the retracted paper, which is full of baseless claims. Yondri's work produced a documented construction date that cannot be pushed any older and completely rules out a 25,000-year-old pyramid. Nadawijaya's paper did not cite Yondri once. Yondri's work destroys the narrative that these grifting losers are trying to push, so they just pretend he doesn't exist, which works wonderfully on suggestible people, because people who want to believe these stories won't lift a finger to fact-check anything.
The absence of such an effort has only fueled speculation. If this site were properly explored, it might confirm an advanced prehistoric civilization. Thus, many suggest archaeology could be blocking this to maintain the traditional timeline.
This bullshit narrative will never not be stupid. Archaeologists want to find amazing things. They want to uncover astonishing sites. There is no traditional timeline. Archaeologists are constantly revising timelines. They wouldn't block an amazing discovery for literally no reason. Anyone who falls for this story is an idiot.
Now, I don't think this is wholly true, and I do have an update on this, which I'll get to in just a second. But first, we need to talk about what I believe is a pretty shady reaction to the publication of this paper.
The reaction to the team's paper on Gunung Padang has been, to put it mildly, extremely shady. The paper was met with an onslaught of criticism, much of it coming from academics who have never even set foot at the site, let alone conducted any meaningful research there. The paper's retraction wasn't due to undisputed evidence proving it's wrong, but rather because certain individuals didn't like its interpretation of the data provided.
Now that's not how science is supposed to work. You can't retract a paper because you disagree with the conclusion. Plenty of published papers are the subject of intense debate and disagreement.
Nobody has to set foot at a particular site to identify scientific fraudulence, moron. Nadawijaya did shit science to push a grift. Real scientists recognized that and exposed him for it. That's not shady. That's called academic and intellectual integrity, a totally foreign concept to everyone in this disgusting cult. Frauds like Button want to portray deliberate distortion of data as a different interpretation so they can slam real scholars for being closed-minded. But he may as well be Terrence Howard saying 1 times 1 equals 2. There are legitimate papers that spur legitimate debate, and then there are frauds who publish pseudoscience. These are different categories, and this paper is in the latter.
Then there's Nature publishing what can only be described as public slander against this paper, and others branding this work as pseudoscience when, in reality, the science behind it is sound. It's just the conclusions that are being debated.
Nope, there is no slander. The science is not sound. It is pseudoscience. Cry forever about it.
Real science operates through competing interpretations, not dogmatic suppression. But throwing around accusations of pseudoscience, as figures like Flint Dibble have done, despite having no geological expertise and never having visited the site, is reckless and career-destroying.
Stupid jerkface wet blanket Flint is at it again. He doesn't even understand geology, and he didn't even go to the site himself. Well, he's a fucking archaeologist, which you aren't, and he knows how to read papers and determine that they're fraudulent, which that one is. Also, career-destroying? You're whining about real archaeologists calling out pseudoscience as being career-destroying, while every single fraud in this cult has been mobilizing their loser followers to try to get Flint fired non-stop for 2 full years. Fucking hypocrites.
The irony is that the site itself hasn't even been properly excavated, yet these critics feel confident in making definitive claims about what it isn't without offering a shred of counter-evidence. If anything, this entire debacle reveals an ugly truth about how rigid academic gatekeeping can be, shutting down new ideas not with better science but with institutional pressure and public ridicule.
Blah 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 gatekeeping, blah blah blah, they don't even have their own evidence.
Hey dickbag, when you say yet again that the site itself hasn't been properly excavated, that's you being a fucking liar. Even in that tweet from Flint that you flashed, he explicitly states that the site has been excavated. You're whining about how real scholars aren't treating this fake paper fairly, while you are literally denying the existence of legitimate research on this site. You aren't even telling your viewers that it exists. So who the fuck is the real gatekeeper here, asshole? It's you. You don't want your viewers to know about real science that has been done at this site. You want them to know only about the fake science you promote so that you can paint the scientific community as closed-minded jerkfaces. You can't even bring yourself to put Flint's tweet in the proper context. What you flashed is part of an 18-tweet thread. Flint wonders why nobody has asked local archaeologists who obviously know a lot about this site. Then the bit that Button showed, which again mentions that it has been fully excavated. Then a video where he talks to Yandri, the researcher who did the excavation. Uh-oh, don't show that to anyone. And then tweet after tweet after tweet, summarizing the findings of the excavation, artifacts, analysis, real actual science, followed by commentary about how the retraction was mishandled, leaving room for further waves of disinformation. This is actual science communication, not lying to the public to infect them with bullshit stories that have been firmly disproven. But this is where we're at today. This paper, despite being retracted, was amplified by the pseudo-archaeology cult, using the whole ivory tower is trying to silence the super hot truth angle as ammunition. Graham Koch featured this site in Ancient Apocalypse, spewing all the exact same horseshit. Endless exposure for all the lies, and the legitimate pushback is limited to a thread on Twitter with a few hundred retweets. That's it. I mean, until me, I guess that's why all of the shitheads in this cult hate me so much. They've never been exposed in such a visible way before. So let's continue.
Many archaeologists see Hancock as a threat to their field, portraying him as a pseudoscientist, even when the research he highlights, like Dr. Hillman's, follows legitimate scientific methods. If Gunung Padang really is as old as this data suggests, it forces a re-evaluation of human history, something mainstream academics seem unwilling to entertain. The aggressive pushback isn't about protecting science. It's about protecting an entrenched paradigm.
Again, this does not mean that the proposed older date is necessarily correct. I just think the retraction, criticism, and slander is unjustified, considering it's all based on interpretation of good, solid data.
That being said, the authors did make some pretty definitive claims about Gunung Padang's extreme age, presenting their conclusions with more certainty than the evidence might strictly allow. A more cautious approach in their language could have helped avoid some of the backlash. Likewise, some of the more extreme reactions, accusations that archaeologists are deliberately covering things up or corruptly suppressing the truth, aren't helpful either. Not every academic is part of some grand conspiracy. Many are just skeptical, which is a natural part of the scientific process.
He's so charitable, you guys. He spent the entire video poisoning the well, whining about gatekeeping, and spewing horseshit about how archaeologists don't want timelines to be revised, even though that happens literally constantly. But not all academics are part of a grand conspiracy that I am overtly outlining in every single video, okay, guys?
At the end of the day, wouldn't it be better if both sides engaged in open-minded discussion, rather than resorting to dogmatic dismissals or inflammatory accusations? Well, yeah, that would be nice, as would further excavation of the site, which would really help us get to the bottom of this fascinating mystery.
Fuck you, Mike. If you wanted open-minded discussion, you wouldn't hide real research from your viewers. This attempt to play the mediator between two childish extremes is fucking pathetic. You're a fraud peddling pseudoscience. Real scholars expose you. You and Graham can hide behind your accents and I'm just asking questions costume, but your grift is finally crumbling. Deal with it. Moving right along, let's hit one more video of his called An Entire Civilization Might Be Buried Under the Sahara. Man, this wanker really is just a Graham Cock clone, isn't he? Even though he won't explicitly mention Graham so that he doesn't give away his complete lack of originality, everything in this video is some bullshit Graham has spewed that has been debunked 1,000 times. Let's check it out.
The collapse of the Green Sahara lines up almost perfectly with the sudden rise of ancient Egypt. That's odd. Why would one of history's most iconic civilizations emerge right after the environment got worse?
This goes against everything we know about how civilizations form. Usually, they rise because of abundance, not in the wake of environmental disaster. But here's a thought. What if the civilization we call ancient Egypt wasn't the beginning, but the continuation? As the Sahara dried up, what if the people who once lived in those fertile lands were forced to migrate, clinging to the last stretch of green, the Nile River? It would have been the final oasis, the last viable lifeline in a collapsing world. Could the founders of Egypt have been the remnants of a lost culture, one that thrived in the Sahara during its green golden age, and who have since been lost to time?
What if indeed, you guys? Well, we don't need to speculate. There were civilizations in Africa before Egypt. They're called pre-dynastic Egyptian cultures. This is common knowledge among archaeologists. That doesn't mean they were super advanced cities with space lasers, but it's a thing. Mikey is pretending to be a super genius, suggesting a bold new theory that is basically just facts we already know. Amazing.
Now, according to the orthodox view, this is impossible. There cannot have been any civilization in this region that predated ancient Egypt. But intriguingly, that's not what the Egyptians themselves believed.
Cannot have been any civilization in this region that predated ancient Egypt? What the fuck are you talking about, asshole? The migration of Saharan Neolithic populations toward the Nile Valley as the region dried up is the current working model in the field. Nubia, the Badarian, and the Nakata. Much is known about these cultures going all the way back to 4500 BCE. The relationship between Saharan Neolithic cultures and early dynastic Egypt is an active and well-funded area of research. Nobody in the field is claiming it is impossible that people lived in the Sahara before Egypt or that those people didn't contribute to Egyptian civilization. Yet again, the assertion that the closed-minded orthodoxy forbids this question is nothing but a lie to make Button look like an ultra-brave truth-teller pushing back against a closed-minded establishment. It's beyond pathetic.
The ancient Egyptians didn't see themselves as the beginning. They saw themselves as the inheritors of something much older, a legacy civilization. And we know this because of the records that they left behind. Three major ancient texts, the Abydos King List, the Turin King List, and the Palermo Stone, give us our earliest timelines of Egyptian rulers. In all three cases, the Egyptians recount a past that extends not just a few centuries beyond the conventional timeline, but over 30,000 years further back. However, modern historians don't believe them. Egyptologists today selectively decide which parts of these records to accept as fact and which to dismiss as myth, despite the fact the original Egyptian authors made no such distinction. Let's look at the Wikipedia page for the Turin King List. It confidently states that the papyrus was originally a tax roll, but on its back is written a list of the rulers of Egypt, including mythical kings, such as gods, demigods, and spirits, as well as human kings. But here's the key problem. The ancient Egyptians themselves never categorized their rulers this way. To them, this was simply a record of their past, one continuous line of kings and rulers, stretching deep into prehistory. This division between real and mythical is a modern invention, but to the ancient Egyptians, this was all one continuous record. They didn't view their past as legend, they viewed it as history.
As is often the case with frauds like Button, we get a few legitimate facts mixed in with a bunch of bullshit. The Turin King List opens with a mythological section listing divine figures including Ptah and Ra, then transitions through a category the document itself labels the Shemsu Hor, or the followers of Horus, and then begins with the historical pharaohs. The document organizes these categories through its own structure, headings, and the character of the entries. Egyptologists did not invent the distinction. He's lying. The Abydos King List is a cultic document. The inscription above the cartouches says exactly what it is, a ritual in which Seti I bestows offerings upon his royal ancestors. It excluded the Amarna pharaohs entirely because they were deemed illegitimate. It is not a chronographic record and it never claimed to be. The American Research Center in Egypt states directly that the Temple King Lists served a cultic rather than historic function and should not be treated as literal chronological lists. Then this 30,000 year figure comes from adding up the reign lengths assigned to the divine and semi-divine sections of the Turin list. Egyptologists are aware of those figures, they address them, and they note that these entries operate in mythological time, not historical time. The Egyptians had a conceptual distinction between cyclical, eternal, mythological time and linear historical time. The divine reigns in the king lists belong to the former. This is documented in Egyptological literature. It is not a modern conspiracy to suppress a 30,000-year prehistory. It is source criticism, which is what historians do with every ancient document from every culture on Earth. This is what all these frauds do. They cite actual artifacts and sources that genuinely exist, and then just lie about them, as though clueless assets on YouTube somehow know more about them than the archaeologists who found them and have been studying them their whole lives. It's the most arrogant and intellectually dishonest thing imaginable. Those dumb archaeologists don't know how to archaeology, so listen to me fumble absolutely all of it to sell dumb stories on the internet. The pseudo-archaeology cult in a nutshell.
So here's the question. What if the civilization we call ancient Egypt wasn't the first spark of human advancement in the region, but a reboot of a much older culture? One now buried beneath thousands of years of sand in what we call the Sahara.
Yeah, so that's quite a bit different. It's what we call the old bait and switch. What if there was stuff before ancient Egypt, which he presents as his own idea, even though it's common knowledge that there definitely was and we know a lot about it? And then we jump all the way to what if crazy super advanced 12,000-year-old something or other. Every time. Let's see how well he can do a Gramcock impression.
Here's something that's rarely discussed. The ancient Egyptians often spoke of a mysterious place they called the Land of the West. It was associated with the afterlife, but also curiously described in some texts as a fertile, abundant land. In the Book of the Dead, this paradise is called the Field of Reeds, a place of lush crops, flowing waters, and endless peace. Mainstream scholars usually interpret this as symbolic, a mythic heaven. But what if it wasn't entirely metaphorical? What if these visions of green fields in the West were cultural memories? Echoes of a time when the Sahara itself was a fertile, thriving landscape. And the Egyptians weren't alone. Centuries later, classical authors like Ptolemy, in his Geographica, described lakes, rivers, and settlements far to the south and west of Egypt, deep in what's now the Sahara Desert. Strangely, some of the features he recorded line up perfectly with ancient river systems and paleolakes we've only recently detected using satellite imagery. So how could he have known that, unless this was ancient knowledge, preserved and passed down long after the land itself was swallowed by sand?
This all raises a compelling possibility. The Sahara wasn't just green, it was inhabited. And not by scattered nomads, but by structured societies, with trade routes, ritual centers, maybe even cities, wiped clean by a brutal and sudden climate collapse.
It is a pretty good Gramcock impression, I'll give him that. This interpretation of the Field of Reeds as a cultural memory of the Green Sahara is in fact one of Graham's dumb talking points. Egyptologists interpret the Field of Reeds as a funerary paradise in the Egyptian afterlife cosmology, a well-documented theological concept with no ambiguity about its function. His Ptolemy claim is even worse. Ptolemy was a 2nd century CE geographer working in Alexandria. He compiled geographical knowledge from Roman-era trade routes, military surveys, merchant accounts, and even earlier Greek sources. His descriptions of African geography contain both accurate information from these sources and significant errors. The fact that some features in his work vaguely correspond to paleo river systems detected by satellite is not evidence of preserved ancient knowledge from a long-lost civilization. It just shows that Ptolemy drew on accounts from people who had traveled into the African interior and reported what they saw, or drew on earlier sources that did the same. Academics who study Ptolemy's geography have spent decades reconstructing exactly which sources he used and where his errors come from. None of them have concluded that his African data represents the transmission of knowledge from a pre-dynastic civilization. This is just a big bowl of what if.
Well, it's a powerful theory, but myth and memory aren't enough. So the question becomes, is there any solid evidence?
Well, interestingly, genetic evidence has emerged that supports the idea of complex, interconnected populations living in the Sahara, long before the rise of dynastic Egypt. Ancient DNA from sites like Tafourolt in Morocco from 15,000 years ago reveals a surprising blend of sub-Saharan African and Near Eastern ancestry, suggesting long-distance contact across what was then a habitable Sahara.
Yes, humans existed. We already knew that. It doesn't support your super awesome lost civilization claims. Got anything better? No? Then I guess we're moving on.
But aside from all of that, one of the most intriguing pieces of this puzzle comes from a monument we all know, the Great Sphinx of Giza.
The orthodox view dates the Sphinx to around 2500 BC, built during the reign of the Pharaoh Khafre of the 4th dynasty. But here's the strange part. There are no inscriptions on the Sphinx that actually link it to Khafre. And some geologists, most notably Dr. Robert Schock, argue that the erosion patterns on the Sphinx and its enclosure don't match the dry wind-blasted conditions of the last few thousand years. Instead, they resemble water erosion, the kind caused by sustained rainfall over long periods. This raises a staggering possibility. If that erosion was caused by rain, then the Sphinx must date back to the African humid period, the last time this region experienced heavy, consistent rainfall. In other words, the Sphinx may have been carved thousands of years earlier than we thought, not in the Age of Pyramids, but in the time when the Sahara was green. If that's true, then someone, some culture, was building megalithic monuments during prehistory, in the heart of a thriving green Sahara.
Oh cool, a tired old Gramcock talking point presented as new information. This water erosion claim for the Sphinx was introduced by John Anthony West, an author with a background in esoteric studies and no geological training, who was explicitly trying to find scientific support for the idea of a lost civilization. West's own stated goal, documented in his writings, was that if water erosion on the Sphinx could be confirmed, it would overthrow all accepted chronologies of civilization. He recruited Robert Schock to provide the geological framing. The conclusion preceded the investigation. Again, this is the central claim of Graham Hancock and Robert Balvel's Keeper of Genesis. It appears in Fingerprints of the Gods too, and obviously in several of Graham's Rogan appearances. Button is really looking to be handed the official torch, it would seem. Anyway, this hypothesis is firmly rejected by the archaeological community. Mark Lenner, who has conducted the most extensive ground-level survey of the Giza Plateau, has documented that the architectural sequencing of the Sphinx within the Khafre complex does not allow for a construction date earlier than Khafre's reign. Geoscientist Jorn Christensen concluded there is no geological evidence that the Sphinx was carved earlier than any other monument on the plateau, and the erosion profile is consistent with water seeping through natural fissures in the limestone before the Sphinx was carved, not with sustained prehistoric rainfall on a finished structure. Geoscientist James Harrell published a detailed response to Schock, noting that the weathering is consistent with water-saturated sand cover over the buried structure across its history, with no requirement for prehistoric rainfall. Does Mikey go over any of this? Of course not. Moving on.
But let's be clear, again, this isn't proof of a lost civilization beneath the Sahara. It's suggestive, intriguing, but not conclusive. However, one fact is beyond dispute. We've barely scratched the surface of this vast desert.
Due to its vast size, over 9 million square kilometers, only a tiny fraction of the Sahara Desert has been archaeologically surveyed, let alone excavated. Some estimates suggest that less than 1% of the Sahara has been properly explored using modern archaeological methods. Why? Well, because it's hot, remote, politically unstable in places, and simply overwhelming in scale. But under all that sand could lie entire chapters of human history we've never read. If an advanced culture did once exist here, climate collapse could have buried its remains under dunes that stretch for hundreds of miles. Stone structures, cities, even inscriptions preserved but hidden. And until we look, we'll never know.
So considering the vast area now covered by sand, and the fact we know this area was once green, lush, and inhabited, isn't it at least possible that we're missing something? That perhaps an entire civilization, or even multiple civilizations, once thrived here, only to be erased by time and sand?
Anyone who watched the Flint Graham debate has heard this bullshit before. Anything could be anywhere, Buttnut. Atlantis could be under my fucking house. But what if maybe is not how science works? And since Flint debunked this bullshit attitude so well in his debate with Graham, I'll just let him respond to this exact same argument yet again.
What I mean is that due to remote sensing, due to surface survey, and due to archaeological excavation, we actually have reasonable coverage across the Sahara. We understand that during green periods in the Neolithic, we can see agricultural villages, and before the Neolithic, we can find ephemeral hunter-gatherer camps where they were napping stones.
That's right. Archaeological survey does not require excavating every square kilometer. Remote sensing, surface analysis, and satellite radar imaging give us substantial coverage of the Sahara without putting a trowel in the ground. Ancient river channels invisible to the naked eye have been mapped from space. Paleoclimate data from lake sediments as well as pollen cores document what was living where and when across the entire region. We have ancient DNA from human populations across the humid period of the Sahara, as he mentioned. We have thousands of recorded sites. All of it, every line of evidence, paints the same picture. Hunter-gatherer camps, Neolithic pastoralists, and the early stages of agricultural societies. So as bad as, "but have you looked literally everywhere though," sounds when you really think about it, the reality is much worse. The evidence specifically contradicts the claim. Again, Graham famously admitted in that debate that there is no evidence for his advanced Ice Age civilization. None. And predictably, his justification was that we haven't looked everywhere yet, just like Button. It is the unfalsifiable core that all of these pseudo-archaeology grifters use, which makes it objectively pseudoscience. Whatever the evidence shows, the proof is always in the place we haven't searched yet, even if what we know specifically contradicts their claims, and they just ignore that inconvenient fact. This video is Button's grift in its purest form. He describes the African humid period accurately. He describes the desertification accurately. He references real sites and real research in shallow, rapid-fire fashion. He earns your trust. And then once he has it, he layers Graham Cox's lost civilization bullshit on top and presents it as what the evidence specifically leads to. That's the grift. While we could spend several days doing this, these three videos of his paint a very clear picture of what his channel is all about. With all of that covered, Mikey's Rogan appearance won't surprise you at all. Imaginary lost civilizations, aliens, you name it. So let's pivot over there for a few select highlights to finish things off.
I love your channel, man. It's really great.
You're
really doing some really interesting videos. When did you get started?
Thanks. Well, I only started the YouTube less than a year ago.
So that's crazy.
It's been a bit of a wild ride.
I don't even know how I found it. It was like one of them YouTube recommends things. It just popped up. And I don't remember which one it was. It was something on ancient history.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh.
Does it matter, Joe? YouTube knows that you're a gullible idiot who falls for pseudo-archaeology frauds left and right, so it fed you the newest model for clicks. You bought the hell out of it like everyone knew you would, and now the loser fraud is in your studio, ready to poison over a million minds with stories full of lies for cash. That's the kind of insane power you wield.
So did you start off on a traditional academic journey and then sort of get sidetracked into a YouTube career? Like, how did this work?
Yeah, basically. So I studied ancient history at university for 4 years. And I've always been interested in history. I've done history all the way through. Like, I was fascinated about history as a kid and got to the stage in my life where it was, you know, thinking about going to university. So I thought, I'll do ancient history at university and study there for 4 years, graduated, all of that kind of stuff. But there came a point during my degree where I was kind of, you know, a little bit, I didn't quite agree with the kind of high level ideas regarding the timeline of history and what we're taught about our ancient past. And it wasn't that I disputed anything that I'd been taught, and I have like great respect for the people that I met at university and my professors, and I don't dispute anything that we were taught actually on the course, but it was more the kind of high level macro perspective of history that I found myself having more and more questions about. And
sounds like somebody can't keep up with his own lies. You told Graham that you didn't agree with what you were being taught, that they told you we had already figured out everything, which of course is a lie. Now you're saying you respected your professors and don't dispute anything you were taught? Which is it, dickhead?
What bothered you? Like, what were the questions?
It was kind of the big questions regarding the origins of civilization and how deep civilization goes and how complex human behavior, you know, I thought went way back further into history than what we were being taught. And I wasn't too, I just didn't buy this idea that nothing happened for like vast stretch of time.
Nothing happened. A lot happened. Hunter-gatherers were doing hunter-gatherer shit all over the place. When you try to paint yourself as this bold, independent thinker questioning the institutional dogmas, you just sound like a fucking idiot. But this is the story that sells, so you lead with it in the first 2 minutes of the episode. Michael Button, the wunderkind who broke free from the academic overlords suppressing the truth, the real authority in a sea of closed-minded, woke Marxists academics who are on their 10th booster and have pronouns in their Twitter bios. This is what you need to say to fleece the dumbasses who watch Joe's show. In reality, your degree has absolutely nothing to do with the prehistoric record. You didn't even take any coursework on this stuff. You studied Greece and Rome and whatnot. This is an act, and it's a transparent one.
Because it was during my course that they found that modern humans, they made this discovery in Morocco in 2017 or 2018, I think. And that was when I was at university.
Was that Denisovans?
No, Homo sapiens. So I can't remember this. It's called like the Jebel Irud site or something like that. But they were modern Homo sapien remains. They thought they were Neanderthal initially because they were so old.
How old were they?
They're 315,000 years old. That's kind of like the estimate. It goes up to potentially 360,000 years old. So they're super old. And yeah, they thought they were initially Neanderthals of this age, but then they discovered a few more, and they classified them as Homo sapien. And when I saw that, I was like, how is this not kicking up more of a fuss? Because before them, the oldest Homo sapien remains we had were around 200,000 years old, and that had been the case for like a decade or something. And before that, it was like 100,000 years old. So this discovery pushed back the age of our species by another third, like 100,000 years. So I saw that, and I was thinking, like, how are we still basing our kind of idea of history around the fact that nothing happened for, you know, 310,000 years, and then everything happened in like the last, you know, 10,000 years.
Yes, what a perfect example of biological anthropologists revising timelines based on new data. The precise thing you pretend doesn't happen literally ever, right, Mikey? And of course, you're just lying half the time anyway. The Jebel Irhoud remains were not classified as Neanderthal because they were so old. Originally, the site was thought to be around 40,000 years old, roughly around when Neanderthals went extinct. When the dating was revised to 315,000 years in 2017, they were reclassified as early Homo sapiens. So they were classified as Neanderthal when they were thought to be young, and then they were reclassified when they turned out to be old. You have the causation completely backwards. Then he asks, how is this not kicking up more of a fuss? Are you shitting me? It was published in Nature. Then Nature ran a news article calling it a rewrite of our species' history. The Max Planck Institute issued press releases. BBC covered it. NPR covered it. It was global news. It was a pretty fucking big fuss. But most importantly, all of this has absolutely nothing to do with advanced ancient civilizations that definitely didn't exist. Just because Homo sapiens evolved earlier than previously suggested, it doesn't make your dumb stories true, and it doesn't mean nothing happened. Shit was happening. There just wasn't any Atlantis or any crap like that.
Mainstream, for want of a better word, I don't really like using that because I don't think there's such thing as a mainstream. It's not like there's a group of people that all collectively decide, but some particularly vocal mainstream kind of historians and scientists seem to claim to know absolute truth about the past, and that's just stupid. Like, how can anyone know about what happened 100,000 years ago or 200,000 years ago? And it kind of gets me a little bit riled up, because at the end of the day, none of us know what happened back then. So I think a lot more possibilities are, you know, possible than what many people appreciate.
No, we know what we know based on the evidence that we have. If you uncover new evidence, you can revise what we know. That's how literally all science works, you fucking dong. Nobody claims absolute truth. You just want gullible viewers to not even look up what we know in the first place, because mainstream whatever is just arrogant jerk faces. You want them to accept the dumb stories you tell based on zero evidence whatsoever. We know things about what happened in the past. Nuh-uh. Is not a counter-argument.
Yeah. Did you ever see, there was a video documentary back in the day, something about the mysteries of the Sphinx, and there was this archaeologist that was mocking Graham Hancock's ideas and Dr. Robert Schock's ideas about the timeline, saying, you know, talking about things that existed pre-10,000 years. And he was saying, what evidence is there of any civilization from 10,000 years ago? This was literally, I think, around the same time that they discovered Göbekli Tepe.
Yeah.
Like this guy was mocking it. I think slightly thereafter they discovered Göbekli Tepe, which threw everything into a tizzy, because now you've got something that was absolutely covered, they believe intentionally, somewhere in the neighborhood of 11,000 years ago.
Joe, you're fucking stupid. Göbekli Tepe is not civilization. Words mean things. Nobody in that documentary was saying that no organized human activity existed 10,000 years ago. They were asking for evidence of the specific civilization supposedly responsible for an earlier Sphinx. And Graham is not even mentioned in that documentary. What actually happens is that James F. Romano, curator of the Egyptian collection at the Brooklyn Museum, makes a complete fool out of Weston Schock by asking one very simple question. If there was a sophisticated civilization thousands of years before dynastic Egypt, where is the fucking evidence? Where are the tools, the settlements, and the material remains of that civilization? You would need a sophisticated pre-Diluvian culture building monuments with characteristic Egyptian iconography and leaving absolutely nothing else behind. As Dr. Romano puts it, that sounds like a Star Trek episode. It's the same bullshit every time. Just endless whining about how closed-minded academics mock these bold ideas, which are actually just dumb stories based on precisely zero evidence.
You know, there's speculation that one of the pillars from Göbekli Tepe that is unearthed is some sort of a calendar of events. And they believe that it depicts some sort of a disaster. Like that these, whatever, how they're making these images to be associated with either an impact or something, but there's a timeline that's inscribed in these pillars.
Yeah, there's like a study that was written or a paper that was written, and they think it's pillar 43, I think it is. There's kind of like a cosmic calendar, and it's like almost a prediction model of an impact that could happen or already has happened, and it's like a warning for the future. That is still disputed, but I mean, there's been good research that's done into that that suggests that's what it is. And it's certainly a site that has cosmic alignments and has been built with the stars in mind, which is something that we can say about so many ancient sites around the world, which is another thing that isn't really considered by, you know, quote-unquote mainstream archaeology, perhaps as much as it should be.
No, guys, there is not good research to support what you're spewing. This crap is from Martin Swetman, an engineer, not an archaeologist, who visually matched animal carvings on Pillar 43 using modern constellation software and decided they lined up with the sky on the date of a supposed impact around 10,950 BCE. That's one guy with Stellarium and a hard-on for confirmation bias, and we debunked the shit out of this in the Jimmy video. The animal carvings don't have established associations with those constellations in the ancient Near East, which is kind of a massive fucking problem if your whole theory depends on exactly that. Button presents this to a huge audience like it is seriously supported and not just a fringe claim unanimously rejected by the people who actually work on the site. And sorry, that line about mainstream archaeology ignoring cosmic alignments just makes you sound like a fucking idiot. Archaeoastronomy has been an established academic field for decades. You can't say that archaeologists are ignoring something while describing a subfield with a name that means studying that exact thing. Stonehenge, lots of sites in Mexico, Mexico, Giza, it's a robust field. And there is peer-reviewed literature on Göbekli Tepe's possible alignments going back to at least 2013. You are telling millions of people that academia ignores a field that academia created. Great work, dingus.
Bizarre thing that, you know, agriculture appears in multiple different places at pretty much the exact same time all over the world. And that's never made sense to me, because if agriculture was such a kind of vital invention for civilization to flourish, then why did no one invent it for, you know, 310,000 years? And,
right.
And then in South America, in Mesopotamia, in ancient China, and you could argue there's other different places that, so say there's like South America and there's Central America. I mean, you could argue that's potentially connected, but a lot of people say it isn't. So how can agriculture, if it's such an incredible invention, be invented by multiple people at the same time, and then but no one else thought of it before? I mean, it doesn't make sense to me.
It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense they wouldn't figure out seeds.
Why didn't humans just magically invent agriculture like a million years ago? And why didn't ancient Rome have the internet? It doesn't make sense, you guys. Well, when you're fucking stupid like these two, nothing makes sense. To everyone else, it's just basic cause and effect that has been understood for a very long time. The end of the Younger Dryas around 11,700 years ago brought climate stabilization for the first time in roughly 100,000 years. The preceding period had temperature swings too dramatic and unpredictable to sustain long-term crop cultivation anywhere on Earth. When the climate stabilized, the conditions that made agriculture viable appeared globally at the same time because it was a global climatic event. Of course, it appeared in multiple places at once. The whole planet's climate changed at once, you nimrods. Also, migration is a thing. People can change locations. A group of people can figure out agriculture, and then some of those people can go to other places and do more agriculture. Merchants are a thing. Seeds can be traded. How the fuck is this so hard to wrap your heads around, guys?
Yeah, so this is the preservation problem, and this is something I talk about in my videos. So I kind of always ask the question, like, what if human culture had flourished in the Eemian, for example, which was from 130 to 115,000 years ago? What realistically would survive? Because it's such a vast, vast length of time that it's really unlikely, at least as far as I can tell. And obviously, I'm not a scientist. I'm not like a, you know, a materialist. I'm not any kind of, I'm just a guy. I'm not even a historian, technically. But as far as I can tell, it's extremely hard for these, for any materials, but even our modern materials in our huge civilization that, you know, 8 billion people, industrial society, sending rockets to space, you know, all the crazy stuff that we're doing, even us, if we disappeared tomorrow, I think it would be extremely unlikely that pretty much anything would survive when you get up to these huge timescales of like 100,000 years. And so I've been doing quite a lot of, you know, research into this, and because I obviously don't want to, you know, get things wrong and put falsehoods out there and mislead people. Like, I don't want to look like a dickhead in front of like, right. like millions of people or whatever. So I've been trying to, like, you know, debunk myself or play devil's advocate to myself on this point, because, you know, that's the best way to make your argument airtight, and no one's really out there debunking me. I don't know if that's because I'm right or because, like, no one knows me. Maybe that would change after a show like this, but
what would survive from some awesome advanced ancient civilization? Well, definitely more than literally nothing, genius. Yes, you're not a scientist or historian or anything else of relevance. That's why you don't know that. But as to the rest of the crap you said, no one has been debunking you because archaeologists are busy doing archaeology and they're tired of getting harassed into oblivion by your toxic cult members every time they fact-check one of you shitheads. But don't worry, I'm here now, so get ready for your reputation to find its way over to the toilet. And sorry, you don't want to mislead people? That's literally all you do. You make endless content deliberately misleading people. You want to debunk yourself? Really? Have you considered doing a 10-second Google search on any of the dumb shit you say? Because that would do the trick. That's why it's so easy for a generalist like me to debunk you. I just have to be able to smell bullshit and read things.
I've been really looking into the kind of degradation of modern materials as much as I can and trying to work out how much would survive from a civilization like ours if we disappeared tomorrow in 100,000 years' time. So if you
Right, like someplace like London or Manhattan, like what would be left in 100,000 years?
Yeah, of like an actual modern city. And the scary truth is it's almost nothing.
Nothing? Really? nothing. Today's Manhattan in 100,000 years would become literally nothing. Just a fucking forest without so much as a single girder, not even microscopic traces of plastics. Nothing. I know you keep saying you're not a scientist, and it shows, so what the fuck are you basing that on?
As far as I can tell, and obviously...
Cement buildings, they would just deteriorate?
They would go like... Concrete would crack and you'd get CO2 in there and freeze-thaw weathering, and over these huge timescales of like 5,000 years, 10,000 years, they would just crumble down into dust and be absolutely imperceptible.
Just 10,000 years.
I think so. Obviously, I'm just doing this off the top of my head. I haven't got any notes in front of me or anything, but as far as I could tell from my research, it's going to be a few like 10,000 years, 20,000 years max. It's not going to get up to these timescales of 100,000 years.
Okay, so based on your research, which is just you making shit up, you must be right about the thing you're objectively wrong about because you say so. Got it.
It's just such an incredible amount of time that all these materials that we build with are just going to corrode, and they're going to rust away. If they're metals, they're going to oxidize, they're going to flake until they're just tiny little fragments that just disperse in the sedimentary record, and they're just invisible to see. And
rust isn't invisible. Flakes aren't invisible. Sediments aren't invisible. Geologists know how to analyze soil, sweetie. This is peak Dunning-Kruger.
Nuclear weapons, like we test nuclear weapons in the atmosphere. You could argue if we knew when to look and what to look for, we could see traces of plutonium in the atmosphere from our nuclear weapons testing, or you could see on nuclear waste deposits.
After telling us for several minutes that a prior industrial civilization would vanish without a trace, you then tell us precisely how we could easily detect traces of industrial activity. You're too dumb to even know that you're contradicting yourself. Yes, geochemical and isotopic signatures would be some of the most obvious indicators of a prior advanced civilization. Evidence of such a civilization would be contained in the geological record. This is the Silurian hypothesis. It's been discussed, and people have even looked for those signatures, since scientists are actually open to all possibilities. They found nothing. Shocking, I know.
And the crazy thing is, like, do you know how many sites we have, Homo sapiens sites, from more than 100,000 years ago?
How many?
Nine. We have nine sites, nine glimpses, nine snapshots into over 200,000 years of history, nine moments in time. And we use that to extrapolate out what every single human was doing for
nine globally.
Yeah.
What's your source on that, jackass? I ask because a single published database covering only Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, and Libya catalogs 993 Middle Stone Age sites spanning up to 370,000 years ago. The Southern African Stone Age Site Index for South Africa, Lesotho, Eswatini, and Namibia documents another 492. So where the fuck did you get nine? And no, they're not just caves with fire pits and stone tools. The Middle Stone Age record includes shell beads used as personal ornaments, abstract cross-hatched engravings on ochre, long-distance obsidian trade networks dated to 320,000 years ago, composite hafted tools using adhesives, bone tools, projectile weapons, and ochre paint workshops with complex multi-step production processes. It's funny because asshats like Button are always whining about how closed-minded academia denies all this super awesome ancient stuff, and here he is just flat out denying all these hundreds of fascinating sites. The hypocrisy is off the charts.
Even if you kind of look at the conventional model of history, the ancient Egyptians were wildly ahead of everyone else. It's just so weird. It's
like, so weird.
And that's if you, and the conventional model doesn't really give us any explanations of how they were doing what they were
and
doing.
And they arrogantly dismiss any other explanations, which is really weird. When you're talking about these immense structures that are baffling, absolutely baffling to anybody who's being honest.
Always with this, how the hell did they make the pyramids bullshit? Every fucking time. We live in an era where anyone can access the entirety of human knowledge in a single second with the push of a button, and dumb fucks like these are still asking questions like this. It's like saying, what's the capital of Mongolia? Nobody knows, and there's no way to find out. I've debunked this crap so many fucking times, but here's yet another lightning round. Egyptologists have been studying pyramid construction for over 150 years, and the evidence for our current understanding is overwhelming. The Wadi al-Jarf papyri are actual administrative records written by the people who built the Great Pyramid, detailing labor, organization, food supplies, and logistics in granular detail. The workers' village at Giza shows us exactly who built it, how they lived, what they ate, and how they were organized. A ramp system at the Hotnoob Quarry dates specifically to the reign of Khufu and shows exactly how they moved blocks up steep inclines. We know where the limestone came from and how it was transported via purpose-built canals. We know this shit, guys. Archaeologists know things. So if you would take your thumbs out of your asses for 10 fucking seconds and educate yourselves, you could know what other people know too. Give it some thought.
I don't even see any evidence that the Great Pyramid at Giza... I mean, what's the evidence that that was a tomb? I mean, I don't think they've ever found a body in there.
No.
It's just a chamber which they've called the King's Chamber.
Right.
I mean, I'm not an expert in ancient Egypt by any respect, but it's always baffled me that they're so determined that the pyramids are tombs just because some later pyramids have had, you know, mummies and pharaohs and sarcophagi found inside them, but...
I'm not an expert in literally anything, but where is the evidence for this obvious fact that I could find in 10 seconds of Googling? Jesus fucking Christ, always with the tomb shit. At least this jerk admits that mummies have been found in pyramids, since most of these frauds will pretend that's never happened at all. But for fuck's sake, can we ever get past this tomb shit? Khufu's granite sarcophagus is still inside the pyramid. There was never a body found in it because it's a giant pyramid, which is not exactly a discrete tomb. And Egypt has had looting problems for thousands of years. That's why they built false chambers and hidden passages to deter tomb robbers. Tutankhamun's tomb was found intact, specifically because nobody knew where it was. Beyond the sarcophagus, there is work gang graffiti inside the relieving chambers, referencing Khufu by name. Inscriptions in nearby mastabas referencing Khufu and his pyramid specifically, a mortuary temple, a causeway, a valley temple, the tombs of his family and officials, and administrative records detailing the construction. That's what I call evidence. Now, what evidence do you have for it being anything other than a tomb? Absolutely nothing. That's what I fucking thought.
And you find bodies in, like, you know, buildings today, and that doesn't mean the purpose of that building was to be a tomb.
Right.
It's just someone's exactly. buried there, so someone, yeah, as you
it's
say,
it's a weird assumption. It's a very weird assumption.
Right, because a modern building is totally comparable to a pyramid with a sarcophagus inside, named for the pharaoh who built it, surrounded by a mortuary complex, with administrative records detailing its construction. Exactly the same situation. Great job, morons.
And did you ever read any Christopher...
Christopher Dunn, yeah.
Christopher Dunn's work.
Yes. I know a bit. I haven't read his book, but I know a bit about it. And it's interesting. I mean, he's like a serious guy, isn't he?
He's like an engineer.
Exactly. And yeah. he has quite serious theories that...
He thinks it's a power plant.
Yeah, which would be crazy, wouldn't it?
Especially if you add into that the Graham Hancock's ideas and some of these other people's ideas that perhaps some of these structures are far older.
Yeah, when you start stacking grifts on top of each other, shit does get crazy real fast. Anyway, we've mentioned Christopher Dunn before. He's a machinist, and his power plant bullshit has no basis in legitimate science. He's not a serious person, and you sound dumber when you reference him. Stacks of rocks can't be power plants. Sorry.
We made it.
But we figured out doors.
We did.
We figured out walls and doors, and that changed the game.
But when did we do that, Joe? That's the question.
That is the
because
question.
Because a lot of people would claim to think, and the kind of consensus always is, that we didn't do that until 12,000 years ago. We didn't settle down and form permanent communities until the Neolithic Revolution. And I think that's one of the major paradigms, if you like, that we have regarding our past that simply doesn't make sense in light of new evidence.
Every single one of his rants always ends with, "That doesn't make sense to me," as though quantum mechanics should be regarded as wrong just because it's unintelligible to people who have never learned any physics. Hey, moron, archaeologists have never claimed that all humans prior to 12,000 years ago were nomadic wanderers with no built environments or site use. There are structured living spaces, complex hunter-gatherer settlement systems, and long-duration site use across multiple regions well before the Neolithic. The conventional position is that large-scale sedentary village life linked to farming, storage, and later urban complexity becomes far more widespread in the Holocene. Every time you whine about mainstream consensus, you're always just spewing some horseshit that is directly contradicted by a ton of science you've never bothered to learn. How embarrassing.
What is that evidence that they found of wood construction from far longer than they thought?
Yeah, this is the Colombo structure, and this yes. is something I talk about a lot in my videos because I think it's a crazy find, and I don't understand why it's not kicking up more of a fuss. Like, if I'm the guy that has to kick up the fuss about it, then I'll be that guy because basically, the idea has always been that humans were nomadic hunter-gatherers that move with the seasons and lived in caves or just kind of walked around for all of our history until the Neolithic Revolution, the invention of agriculture 12,000 years ago. And no earlier than that did we ever settle down and live in permanent settlements.
The Colombo Falls discovery is two intentionally modified logs fitted together, dated to around 476,000 years ago. It's very interesting, but construction is not the same thing as a permanent settlement, and it sure as hell is not the same thing as civilization. The reason it is such a remarkable find is specifically that the preservation conditions were exceptional. Waterlogging in low oxygen sediment drastically slows decay, which is the reason that organic material from that era almost never survives. Exceptional preservation does not mean there were wooden towns everywhere that disappeared without a trace.
We've always had this idea that there's been this very popular idea in kind of mainstream historical thought that humans only got smart around 50 to 60,000 years ago. And that's just Homo sapiens. We've always thought that other human species never got smart, never achieved what we call behavioral modernity. And this has always been the kind of idea that we went through this cognitive revolution around 50 to 60,000 years ago. And the most obvious proponent of how entrenched this is in kind of academic thought is, have you ever read the book Sapiens?
Yes.
Yeah, by Yuval Noah Harari. It's an extremely popular book. It sold something like 60 million copies worldwide. By far the most popular book about prehistory and, you know, the story of Homo sapiens.
Sapiens is a book written for a general audience. It's not an authoritative statement from the field of paleoanthropology. And in fact, it's a garbage book full of exaggerated claims. So no to whatever you want to say about that book. But this crap about mainstream thought saying humans only got smart 50 to 60,000 years ago is outdated public simplification. The field has been revising that picture for years through evidence like prepared core technology, pigment use, shell beads, engraved ochre, complex adhesives, Schöningen spears, and other signs of earlier behavioral complexity. He just takes things we already know and presents them as his own insight. It's ridiculous.
Well, it's also when you think about the history of the Earth, there are times that we know that there was, like, there's great bottlenecks that occurred because of some sort of a massive natural catastrophe, like the Toba volcano.
Yeah.
Right, the Toba volcano, which was 70,000 years ago? Is that what it was?
Something like that, yeah.
Brought people down to a few thousand survivors on Earth.
A bottleneck is not evidence of any kind of civilization. Population crashes happen in hunter-gatherer populations, and catastrophe does not magically become proof that cities, monuments, or writing systems existed beforehand. It's the same bullshit every fucking time. Something bad happened, therefore Atlantis, because they say so.
Nothing.
Just look at what we know about the Amazon now.
Yeah,
because of LIDAR and because of, you know, what is his name? Percy Fawcett. Because these people that made these journeys down there looking for these complex civilizations that at one point in time, now we know did exist there.
Yeah.
And just 100 years later, they called those people liars because they went back to the same place and there was nothing left.
Yeah.
Amazon discoveries are a perfect argument against you, actually. Archaeologists revised the picture of Amazonian societies because those societies left traces, including earthworks, settlement signatures, ceramics, anthropogenic soils, and landscape modifications. Researchers found them with well-established scientific methods. When evidence is there, the model changes. That's how the field works. You're just pointing at archaeologists doing archaeology and saying, so archaeologists could be wrong because you don't understand that complex civilizations can't just vanish so immaculately that they leave literally zero trace behind. Grow up.
Well, here's what's really crazy. Have you seen Detroit? Have you seen the evidence of Detroit where trees are going through houses?
And that's like 50 years, less.
Yes,
or if
less.
You look at Chernobyl, the kind of exclusion zone where no one lives, it's already like trees everywhere and like nature is already taking root after less than half a century.
Yeah, bizarre.
Holy shit, there are trees and buildings. Overgrowth is not erasure, you goobers. Archaeologists don't need a fully intact Detroit skyline to substantiate an ancient civilization. They look for ground signatures, chemistry, artifacts, modified landscapes, settlement patterns, and stratified remains. Those can survive in jungles, deserts, caves, floodplains, and even under later construction for thousands of years. Learn literally fucking anything about archaeology, I'm begging you.
This thought that Neanderthals were stupid, they're kind of abandoning that now too. They're thinking they had language, they had tools, they had society.
They definitely did. There's so much evidence. And this kind of puts into the cognitive revolution argument, which is, you know, that we were the only smart species. Like, our name that we gave ourselves, Homo sapiens, literally means smart man. It's always been the idea that we're the smartest humans, and that's why we won. And to be fair, we did win.
We did win.
Win, whatever you want to call
it. We might
it.
Just be the most evil.
Yeah, we might be the most evil, or we just might be the luckiest ones, you know?
Well, we're the weakest, so we probably had to be evil.
It's true.
We had to figure out weapons that would be able to defeat the Neanderthals, who had, by the way, larger brain capacities.
I think
than
they were
sapiens.
Just as intelligent as us, to be
That's
honest.
That's nuts.
Bigger cranial volume does not equal more intelligence. Cognition depends on brain organization, body size, developmental pattern, and what different neural systems are doing, not just volume. Yes, Neanderthals had large brains, but that doesn't mean they were smarter than modern humans. This is basic paleoanthropology, and these two nitwits still managed to make it sound like a bong hit revelation.
Either, I mean, maybe they got wiped out by something like disease, or did they even get wiped out? Because if you even look at the DNA of non-African humans, it's something like 20% in some populations is Neanderthal.
So yes.
They're kind of still here.
No, Mikey, nobody is something like 20% Neanderthal. Individual living non-African humans typically carry around 1 to 2% Neanderthal ancestry. Across the full modern human population, different people carry different Neanderthal-derived DNA segments. Pooling those segments together, you can recover roughly 20% of the Neanderthal genome in aggregate. That doesn't mean any person walking around today is 20% Neanderthal. It means the surviving Neanderthal fragments are spread around across millions of people because introgression does not distribute every inherited segment equally to every descendant population.
The whole history of humans is weird, and for academics to deny this possibility to me seems so short-sighted.
I know. It will change.
And silly.
I think we're on the brink of quite a massive shift in our perspective regarding prehistory.
I think so, too, and I think it has to happen where, I don't mean to say this to be cruel, but the old people have to die.
It's that quote, isn't it? Science advances one funeral at a time.
Yeah,
I hope it doesn't take that long, though, to be honest, Joe. I hope it's just in the next few years.
Well, the good thing is a lot of scientists don't take care of themselves. So. Which is also weird.
Yes, when all those old, unhealthy, closed-minded scientists finally die, it will be the era of the podcast bro. A glorious paradigm shift will occur, and all the podcast bro bullshit will finally be accepted by the scientific community. Except, no, it won't, since educated people of all ages laugh at you losers. Even smart high school students make fun of you on a weekly basis.
One of the things that I find very promising is that a lot of young academics are embracing a lot of alternative ideas, whether quietly or whether they're doing it publicly.
Yeah, well, I think the advent of the internet and, you know, shows like this or the medium of podcasting has really kind of democratized the access to information and allowed people with theories that potentially wouldn't have been able to get out there in the pre-internet age, where they were kind of, you had to go through a kind of academic institution to get a theory heard or debated.
Yes, the Joe Rogan Experience is part of the democratization of information. Why Google things and learn basic facts when you can listen to some dickheads distort reality and lie to you for money for 3 full hours? These morons are so far up their own asses, it's fucking tragic. Hey Joe, you've been platforming countless grifters for over a decade. Have any of them discovered a lost civilization or corrected a genuine scientific error or produced a single piece of original evidence for literally anything? No, that's all happening within academia, which you hate so much. Funny how that works, huh? In reality, the only thing that's been democratized with dog shit shows like yours is the rapid spread of disinformation being peddled by sociopathic frauds who will never admit that they're trivially wrong about literally everything.
I mean, that's the thing about history, is it's all based on massive assumptions. It's not like a hard science. It's interpreting evidence. And that's fine. Like, that's how we do it. But
sure.
That's why I don't get...
Well, it's the only way to do it right
exactly.
now.
It's the only way to do it. So that's why I don't get why people make these definitive conclusions and then don't allow anybody to kind of speculate or hypothesize about anything else.
It's gatekeeping.
It's not gatekeeping to mock pointless frauds who lie to make money on the internet. Gatekeeping is actually what Joe does by exclusively platforming frauds and almost never bringing in legitimate experts. As for this soft science full of assumptions crap, it wouldn't be a pseudo-archaeology video without this ridiculous claim. Archaeology uses stratigraphy, sedimentology, micromorphology, taphonomy, radiocarbon dating, luminescence dating, stable isotope analysis, DNA sequencing, zooarchaeology, paleobotany, use wear analysis, residue analysis, remote sensing, geoarchaeology, and Bayesian chronological modeling. That means interpretation constrained by stratified, dated, independently replicated material evidence from multiple lines of inquiry that all have to agree with each other. That's hard science. Anyone who vomits up anything even remotely resembling a claim that archaeology isn't science is a brainwashed moron with no idea what archaeology is or what archaeologists do. Blatantly unsupported speculation from unqualified idiots on podcasts does not deserve equal standing with material evidence and rigorous data analysis being performed by actual experts all over the world. Cry about it.
It's also these people that have been teaching this one thing forever being threatened by the fact they were wrong. The last thing an academic wants to hear is like, you wrote this book, this stupid book. This book misled people for decades. You were so wrong. Like, they will fight it with every ounce of their being because it's essentially their identity. Their identity is being the gatekeeper of their understanding of human history.
You're describing Graham and every other fraud in this space, dumbass. They write shitty books full of lies, and when real scholars expose their fraudulence, they run to their safe space on JRE and whine about how mean and closed-minded those nasty academics are. For how much you assholes never stop whining about cancel culture, you sure are a bunch of fucking snowflakes.
And these are the guys that are telling us we can't explore these things. And those are the people that are attacking Graham Hancock with every possible insult, calling it the most dangerous show on television. Like this. But it's also it's so revealing because it's so obvious that if you watch the show, you're like, wait, this is the most dangerous show on TV?
Ancient Apocalypse. Yeah.
Like, how is that dangerous? He's like just talking about these bizarre structures that exist that seem to defy our modern understanding of how things are built.
They don't defy our modern understanding of anything. You just refuse to spend even 1 hour gathering legitimate knowledge that pertains to our modern understanding. You're whining about this one Guardian article that called it the most dangerous show on television, which might be slightly hyperbolic. But yes, it is dangerous. It teaches millions of people to distrust archaeology while giving them absolutely nothing in return. Every site is proof that archaeologists are lying. Every alternative interpretation is a suppressed truth. Every baseless story is the brave heterodox position that the establishment is too threatened to accept. That framework teaches millions of people to distrust scientific expertise and instead trust a man who has been wrong about everything he has ever claimed consistently for 30 years. Every single person who is gullible enough to fall for this shit will immediately swallow any other anti-establishment narrative, most critically regarding medicine, vaccines, and all the other shit that actively kills people. So yes, Joe, it's dangerous. And you are responsible for its popularity more than any other single person on the fucking planet. Enjoy that.
But, you know, Ben from Uncharted X, you know, he's done a lot of work on these things. Like those vases are very bizarre. Very bizarre.
And they appear right at the start of the Egyptian dynasties.
Yeah.
And they forget how to do that as well.
We have no idea how they made them. We don't know what tools they used. Anybody that says that they do, you're lying. You really don't know. You can't know. These things are perfectly symmetrical.
Nobody can know things, especially if the things they definitely know contradict the lies I fell for because I'm stupid. Great work, Joe. If you don't know what he's talking about with these fucking vases, go ahead and watch my video on Ben's pathetic rift and how his ultra-precise vases were debunked by his own research team. More on these things and the scam they prop up in a future video. And of course, no matter how much Joe wants to whine about it, hard stone vessel manufacture in Egypt has been studied extensively. Pecking, grinding, drilling with abrasives, shaping, and polishing in the hands of skilled craftspeople, working across generations in dedicated elite workshop traditions, are entirely capable of producing extremely fine results. We have the developmental sequences across pre-dynastic and early dynastic contexts. The precision claims are grossly inflated by people who don't understand measurement uncertainty, sample selection, or manufacturing variability. All the precision tells you is that people who made these objects were really good at making them, nothing more.
Like, one point people always make in like my comments and stuff to try and debunk me is like, oh, we would see pollution, we would see kind of lead signals in the atmosphere or whatever if there was like a big civilization 100,000 years ago. But that's only the case if it was someone on the scale of us now,
because or if they were doing it the way we're doing it. That's the thing. We're talking about a completely different pathway. Clearly, there's some technology that they had that we don't understand. When you talk about the drill holes that they find, or the way they had carved out these enormous, massive chunks of stone.
We don't know the things that we totally know, always. Every time. I covered the drilling and cutting of stone in the Ben video as well. But about the pollution thing, we don't need that. Large and technologically sophisticated societies leave signatures regardless of their specific development path. Settlement hierarchies, middens, quarries, modified landscapes, burials, artifact standardization, ecological disruption, metallurgical residues if they worked metal, storage infrastructure, regional exchange patterns. There are countless ways for civilizations to leave traces of themselves behind that it's literally impossible for no trace to remain. The only way to avoid leaving any of those things at all is to not exist in the first place. Once you acknowledge that, all that's left is, well, maybe we didn't find it yet, which is permanently unfalsifiable and therefore pseudoscience.
Again, if someone is a historian and they got into this, someone's an archaeologist and they got into this because they have this fascination for it, for them to become professors and then start teaching and writing books about this stuff and not still be fascinated by the new stuff,
yeah,
is to me so weird. It's like you missed the whole reason why you got into this in the first place.
Scientists are all fascinated by the science they study, dumbass. They're not fascinated by the bullshit stories peddled by the frauds you platform because they're not idiots like you. So they immediately smell the grift and get back to their legitimate and fascinating science. You are the one who is not actually fascinated by science, or you would have fucking learned some of it by now.
But the thing is, when you go through these kind of systems, and I've sort of got experience of this, obviously I was never a professional academic or anything like that, but you know, I did history for 4 years. I was kind of inside, and I got to the point where it was almost, you know, it was do this as a career, become a professional academic or not. It's very hard to kind of even think this way because everyone around you is thinking within these boxes that we've created for ourselves.
You were never inside academia, Mikey. You got a fucking bachelor's degree in ancient history. You wrote some papers about the Roman Empire. You've never done an ounce of research in your life, and there are no boxes. Archaeology is constantly changing, as is evidenced by a bunch of the shit you yourselves have been bringing up. Jebel Erhud, Göbekli Tepe, Neanderthal cognition. Who figured this shit out? Graham Koch or any of his clones? Fuck no. Academics, academic archaeologists and paleoanthropologists figure out all of this shit. What you chuckle fucks refer to as mainstream science is where all of this comes from. You're constantly using the fruits of academic science to whine about how closed-minded academic science is. It's fucking idiotic.
Yeah. Just to think about the Clovis First issue.
Yeah, I mean, that's the best example. That's
it's the best
crazy.
Example because that guy was destroyed.
Nope and nope and more nope. You morons will never drop this bullshit because when Graham Koch brainwashes you with bullshit, you will never allow it to dislodge from your tiny pea brains, no matter how many times it's debunked. That's why it's become a mantra. You think you can just shout Clovis and walk away like you've won something. We've talked about this in multiple videos. Clovis First was an established model that was challenged with new evidence. That evidence was scrutinized, debated, tested independently, and subsequently held up, all by archaeologists. The model was then revised. Clovis First changed because the pre-Clovis case had stratified sites, dated footprints, lithics, and repeated independent verification. You are simply proving your entire mantra wrong by acknowledging that academics update their understanding when new evidence arises. And absolutely nobody was destroyed at all. Jacques Cinq-Mark continued to work until retirement. You're repeating a lie that Graham told you, nothing more. You want the bullshit stories you spew to be the next pre-Clovis, but they never will be because you have zero fucking evidence.
It's all it is, man. It's human ego is so gross. And this brings me back to psychedelics. Because what do psychedelics do that's most important? Well, the dissolving of the ego. It's one of the most important aspects of it. It makes you realize the folly of your ways.
Then you need to do a fuck ton more DMT, Joe, because you're a pointless egomaniac who is confidently wrong more or less always. And you're poisoning society with your confident wrongness in a way that is genuinely destructive. Maybe switch to ketamine or something. Whatever you're doing is building up your ego, not killing it.
The understanding that these academics, these archaeologists and historians can give us of our world and our history is really cool. It's really awesome. But there's a whole lot more out there. And for them to pretend and dismiss people like – they should embrace people like Graham Hancock. And then they should correct him when he's saying something that's wrong.
Yeah.
But instead of lying and then calling him a racist and saying all these terrible things about him, well, that just shows me that you don't really have an argument. And you're trying to protect your identity. Your identity is the gatekeeper of this information that is not yours to gatekeep.
They correct him all the time, dipshit. Flint did it for 4 hours on your goddamn show. Your response was to ban him permanently and slander him indefinitely on Graham's behalf, you fucking weasel. Nobody's lying about Graham. Nobody called him racist. You are the liar. You and your worthless lying guests, like Benjamin Button over here. You are the problem. Not the nasty academics that hurt your feelings by actually knowing things. You're almost 60. Figure out a way to finally grow the fuck up, Joe.
Have you ever heard of the Silurian hypothesis?
No.
Maybe I have.
What is it?
It's kind of linked to this. It's linked to this, you know, ancient civilization stuff. It's the idea that there could have been an advanced civilization on our planet, you know, 100 million years ago, a non-human one that, advanced and industrial. And we just wouldn't see any trace because of how long ago it was. And they could have been here and, you know, we just wouldn't know because it's been so long. It's kind of like where I come from with my kind of human idea. Obviously, it's a further time span. But it was proposed by two physicists is why I... Well, I just thought of it just then. It's a guy called Adam Frank and...
I've had Adam on before.
You've had him on?
Yeah.
Adam Frank. There you go. I mean, didn't you might have
talked
about it?
We had him on, Jamie, right?
I don't know.
Didn't we?
Let me see.
You can see what
it's a problem. That happens all the time.
Never heard of it, even though we had that guy on the show. Or did we? I can't remember. Classic. Anyway, the Silurian hypothesis was published by the director of NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies, Gavin Schmidt, and astrophysicist Adam Frank in 2018. It's not a genuine proposition, it's a thought experiment. Its purpose is to ask what kinds of geochemical traces an industrial civilization would leave in the geological record over deep timescales in order to understand the limits of our ability to detect such a civilization if one had ever existed. Again, Schmidt and Frank are not claiming such a civilization existed. They do not believe that such a civilization existed. Button distorts their work and pretends that academics have genuinely proposed something that supports his bullshit.
So their idea is kind of like, well, what if, you know, a civilization in the kind of era of the dinosaurs had, you know, become very advanced and an industrial society? And they say we would see absolutely no evidence. Like, when I'm talking about human civilization, we would see some potential evidence, like, you know, rock, carved stone or whatever, but they would say you wouldn't even see the nuclear waste deposits because it's that long ago that nothing would survive. And then I think about that and I think, well, isn't it almost more likely that something did happen, considering we know that intelligence can emerge relatively quickly? Multicellular life has been on the planet for so long.
A limited understanding of the fossil record.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Why couldn't something have happened before? And then you start getting a bit, you know, stoner about it and you start thinking, well, maybe they're still here because they
That's kind of, what I like yeah. to do. I like to go interdimensional.
Yep. This is the precise moment that the podcast goes completely off the rails. And from here until the end, over another hour from now, they just ramble about all the outlandish bullshit they specifically pretend to distance themselves from when attempting to appear as though they can challenge legitimate academics.
Because yeah. I think, like, well, if you do have these quantum computers that can go back 1 second in time and you move forward 1,000 years from now and they're run by AI, like, what can they do? Like, what do they cease to do? These beings cease to exist in this dimension? Do they develop the ability to be transdimensional? Do they no longer exist in our space and time?
And that's our cue to get the fuck out of here. Two morons lying about archaeology is worth listening to for debunking and educational purposes. The rest of whatever the fuck this is just isn't. No matter how rational they initially present themselves to be, these frauds are always Graham Hancock in the streets and Billy Carson in the sheets. Because con men always cast as wide a net as possible. Brazilian UFOs, three-fingered beings, supernatural sulfur, demonic encounters. That's what's on the table for the rest of the episode, and ain't nobody got time for that. In the end, apart from the relentless bastardization of science for money, it's just so tragic that this is what popular media has become. Two pointless douchebags, one of them actively lying for money and the other performatively falling for it for way more money, having a contest for who can be the most dumb and wrong while acting like they're the brave rebels bringing the real truth to the public and sticking it to the corrupt establishment. This is it. This is how millions of people view the world because of asshats like Joe and the frauds like Button who craft entire grifts with Joe's show in mind as a catapult. I don't know how to help people wake up and smell the roses, at least not beyond making content like this. So hopefully a few Button fans were able to get through this video and see what a fraud he is. Maybe some people were able to see through toxic scumbags like Dan and Jimmy, but were still clinging to this guy, thinking he was a little more polished and genuine. I am only too happy to disillusion them so they can see that there isn't a single corner of this cult that is anything other than deception and grime. That's why it's become one of my favorite cults to expose. We get to ruin some frauds and learn some cool facts along the way. And isn't that what it's really all about? So that's it from Michael Button, the Graham Hancock wannabe, who's really just another lazy dime-a-dozen grifter that lies about archaeology to make money on the internet. With the old ones falling off and the new ones having their credibility demolished left and right, will we finally see this pathetic cult evaporate in the near future? We'll just have to wait and see. Until next time.